Good morning. Sorry for the late start. We were trying to fix some computer glitches up here. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, October 21st, 2010. I would like to excuse the Vice Mayor today. He had a work conflict that he had to take care of, so he will not be joining us this morning. The first item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on a convenience store ordinance. How convenient. Chief. I always worry when those who are before us are wearing guns, but that's okay.
Someone said when I was walking in, you're wearing a gun today.
I said, yes, but I'm not wearing my vest, so it's...
Well, that's bold of you, considering none of us have guns. I think you still got the better end of that deal.
Good morning, and first of all, I would just want to once again thank all the stakeholders for working through this process. It's been difficult at times, and as we strive to find a ordinance that is fair and effective, and as we move through this. Once again, we are before you today seeking direction from the council to move forward with the SEPTED ordinance on convenience stores. Just kind of going over the goals and objectives, this really, why did we really start this and where are we coming from? That's to deter crime through crime prevention, reduce crime and calls for service, increase successful prosecution and criminal activity at convenience stores, provide a safer environment for employees and customers in the community, and to free up police resources. Real brief, I'll go over the history. We came before the Public Safety Committee in 2009 in June to talk about a proposed SEPTED ordinance or security plan. Out of that discussion, various SEPTED principles were actually included in our zoning, Mesa zoning ordinances. We met with stakeholders at that time and discussed the security plan, which is basically isolated to individual stores that have problems with crime. Through those meetings, it was from input through the stakeholders that some felt that it'd be unfair to focus in on one, so the discussion of an ordinance that would create rules and regulations for all convenience stores was discussed, and that's really the road that we started traveling. We came back to the Public Safety Committee.
Councilmember Higgins has a question.
Really quick question. So does that mean there's no more security plan option anywhere in the ordinance?
In the current revision that we're coming back with today, yes, there is.
There still is.
We actually added it from direction from last last council
Great.
Meeting.
Thanks.
And you're going to get to that later, right?
Yes, I'm going to cover that here. We continued to meet with stakeholders in May of this year. The Public Safety Committee recommended the proposed ordinance be brought back to full council for consideration, and that's where we were last time. We brought it back and was asked to go back and make some variations to it, and those variations I will go over it with you today. We worked with the City Legal Department to format and revise our ordinance, and we held a final stakeholder meeting on October 12th. For additional input, and some of the input and revisions from that meeting are included in this ordinances before you today, and I'll go over those changes. Additional revisions were made to the ordinance with the current recommendations from City Council from our last meeting. Just to go over some of the changes that were made to the ordinance since last time we spoke, these changes were made in response to stakeholders' input and also from direction from Council. Streamlined documentation requirements throughout the ordinance. We removed the registration compliance decal requirement. We revised the appeal section of the ordinance to identify the city manager or his designee as the hearing authority. We revised the visibility requirements by raising the height of visibility, making it easier for the convenience stores to comply. We revised language requiring landline telephone access be provided to employees in case of emergencies at convenience stores. We revised the lighting requirement and put it to dusk till dawn. We revised the language to include beer and other alcohol be secured from 2 to 6 a.m., which follows state law. We revised the address numbers requirement in the ordinance. We added the included the security plans, and I'll go over that here in a little bit. Other minor language changes to conform with standard city code was changed. We changed the registration requirement from annual to biannual at request of input from the stakeholders. We revised preservation digital video recording requirement from 30 days to 15 days. We revised availability of digital video recording requirements from 24 hours to 72 hours, allowing the stores more time to...
Let me get this straight. These are the revisions you made. Okay.
Right.
I'm just trying to think out if these are the revisions. What did we start with as far as regulations we're imposing on businesses? You can go ahead.
Okay.
That was a comment. That wasn't a question.
We removed the 6x6 vision portal requirement on all refuse enclosure gates. Basically, what we did is we took the original ordinance, and through input from the stakeholders, they said holding data for 30 days is too costly for our storage. So we asked what would be, so we went down to 15 days. And those are the kind of changes that we did. What it would be acceptable for them to hold data? How fast could they get digital video to the police department? We wanted it within 24 hours, which is the day. They said they needed 3 days, so we bumped it up. Obviously, we'd like to get it as soon as possible, but those are some of the revisions that we made to try to find that balance. We changed the employee training requirement to annual to biannual. We changed violations penalty to set fines rather than ranges, the variance of fines. We added another substantial hardship. Right now, the hardship that we put in was really based on monetary ability for the stores and impact. We also put a verbiage in there for other hardships, which could be design and things like that, trying to find that balance. Then we changed the effective date of the ordinance from 30 days to 120 days. Despite the changes that we made, stakeholders continue to have some concerns and some issues with various parts of the ordinance. Immediate notification copies of the ordinance be provided. They're concerned that all convenience stores need to be notified and given copies of it. And we've identified 150 convenience stores that we've been in contact with. They requested a designated board be established to hear appeals in lieu of the city manager or the designee. And they strongly oppose the right to require additional security measures section of the ordinance, which is the safety plan portion of the ordinance. And it's very much unanimous disagreement with the stakeholders on that clause of the ordinance. In the spirit of cooperation, trying to get this thing forward, I would recommend that we either remove that or look at some kind of variance in that, because that really is a hurdle that we cannot get over with stakeholders. Once again, what are we trying to do? We're trying to maximize police resources out in the streets and in the community by reducing police resources spent on offenses that do not pose a serious safety risk. We're trying to reduce police resources spent on offenses with no viable information. And Mayor and Council, really what stemmed a lot of this is, we're sending sworn police officers out to convenience stores to take a police report of a stolen donut. And then we're having to send an officer to go back the next day to pick up the video. So we're spending a lot of time and resources on crime.
So, Chief, we need to install video systems and have 30 days of history and set up a board with the city manager and have 14 appeal procedures so we can keep donuts from being stolen?
Mayor and Council, that's just one example. Obviously, for the video is very important when we come to robbery cases. And
how many of those do we have?
We can get you that data, but I know we do have our numbers for robberies. We've had
It seems to me like robberies is what we want to send police officers out to. Donuts. Unless we've got, I'm not even going to get into the police and donut connection, but unless we have police officers that are sitting around doing nothing, it seems like the original purpose of not using police resources, it seems like we've shifted it from having uniformed police officers go out to another layer of bureaucracy and another system that's going to use resources anyway. So I'm I'm assuming that you've got maybe an idea, or maybe you have an idea that we might not have to do that.
Yeah, and when I get, I'm going to get into some additional.
Okay, so what you're saying is, Mayor, please be quiet, and we'll, let me get through this, and then we'll ask. And that's a good counsel. Yeah, Councilman Simmons.
Too much is going to get lost in the donut comment. I'll give a personal anecdote on this one. When we were having some work done in our house, and this was better part of a decade ago, my wife's credit card was stolen. Her identity, essentially, was stolen. That credit card was then used, and I'm going to use the name of the place. It was Circle K. It was attempted to use at Circle K. And the reason I'm going to use it, they actually did a good job. The way we caught this person, sorry, I had to file through a few expletives before I got to a real word, is that we were able to go to Circle K, contact our security officer, Chandler, it happened in Chandler, Chandler Police, where it was used. Chandler PD contacted the security agency. They had videotape on this old thing, used to call it VHS, it's really old, and they were able to go within 48 hours, certainly, and get the security camera video for that. But this person was using my wife's ID, and those are the kinds of crimes that we're trying to fight. And then as far as the burden that some of these others are causing on city resources, I'm sure you have the statistics as you go through.
Yeah.
But let's get off the donut thing and talk about the real crime.
We can't get off the donut thing because that's what got us here. What our complaint is, and let's go back to where we started. The start of this entire process was we had what I would call, I'm not going to use that word, but we had a preponderance of calls to convenience stores for
beer runs,
petty thefts and other things that were creating a strain on our resources. That's a stolen donut. That's a beer run. That's a candy bar that gets stolen. I don't think we're talking about the major crimes such as identity thefts, which would absolutely require police resources. And we can get into the whole broken windows thing, but I don't know that's where we're at, because we have a true strain on valuable resources. And I think that's where we started. And so I don't want to get away from the donut thing, because that's where this began. And once again, I'm going to take my own counsel and be quiet until you finish your presentation, because I think the chief has some things he might want to talk about.
Well, Mayor and Council, you're absolutely right, Mayor. That's really what started was we started focusing on the calls for service. However, please don't misunderstand. We do have major crimes that do happen at convenience stores.
Yeah.
We've had, you know, I'll give you an example where we had a robbery where a group of individuals went into a store and they actually took over the store, and because it was covered, and this was an independent store. Customers were walking in, and they were tying them up as they were coming in because you could not see.
But that's not. I get that. But that's not where this began.
Correct.
And so I want to keep it to where it began, because I think there are two separate issues, and I think we can handle those in two separate ways. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Well, Mayor, I think you're mischaracterizing where this began, and this. Convenience stores are major consumers of public safety services, and police department has been working for more than 3 years with the industry to try to address the trends and issues that we face. And what we have worked on for the last year and a half is to find a measure that will help prevent crime, that will help make those places a safer site for customers and employees, and that will make it easier for us to catch the bad guys. And the measure that we have has undergone significant revisions from constant stakeholder input. Of course, stakeholders are never happy with any sort of regulatory plan, and so they're going to continue to raise concerns. But I think we need to hear the whole presentation before being either an advocate for convenience stores or against convenience stores.
No, I'm not. I just want to make sure that we keep on point. And I agree with you on the overall objective and the problem. But I think it's important what we were talking about as far as those resources. So, but I'll take your advice, because you're exactly right. I'll let the chief finish, because you're probably going to cover a lot of things I was bringing up anyway.
Yeah, and thank you, Mayor and Council. The next section actually is, I wanted to give Council some alternatives, because this has not been, as Council Member Kavanaugh said, it's difficult to make everybody happy on this. And we're really faced with a situation where we're trying to make something that is effective, but yet balanced, where we can live with. Because we do want a good partnership with our convenience store folks. So I wanted to give the council some alternatives today. Alternative A is to adopt the ordinance that is presented to you today. I would say that we take a look at removing or altering the required to additional security measures section, just because that one we have zero support on. And alternative B would to adopt the ordinance, but
hold
make it.
Chief.
I'm sorry.
We have a council member that's going to interrupt your presentation. Can you believe that? Councilmember Cavanaugh, go ahead.
It's a question directly to that point, because the additional security measure was a proposal that came to our committee from the stakeholders. That didn't come from the committee. So that's why I'm just a little curious why we have a flip-flop on this.
You know, during our meetings, Mayor.
No.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and let the chief answer.
Council, we did not get any support on that. And where that came from, I think originally you have a split. You have some convenience stores that do not want to have to be regulated because they believe they're not having problems, and then you have some that are having the problems and they're worried that they're going to be regulated. During our meetings, that was very much non-concurrence with that one in any of our input.
Councilmember Higgins.
Do you know what page it is in this thing? So I can just
11.
And I would say that I think I spoke with some, had some meetings on this issue, and I think what the convenience stores are concerned about is that they're going to put all the security, apply, do all the things we've already asked them, and then they're worried that not only after they spend whatever money that someone else can come in, the chief, and say, oh, you need this, and that, oh, we need this, is not, there's no money attached to it, so they're freaking out whether, right, isn't that, they're upset because they can't plan for something they don't know you might ask them to put in. I mean, and that's what that seemed to me. That was the biggest. Was that the biggest reason why they didn't like this? This is not just for someone who didn't do anything. This is someone who's put all the stuff in we've already asked them to do.
So, Chief, maybe you should clarify. At least the way I'm reading this, this is only a requirement if we have essentially repeat offenses. We use the word excessive. I'm not advocating one way or another. I'm just trying to clarify the issue here. The term is excessive calls. Then the police chief can make a determination that additional security measures need to be taken.
And is that a subjective measure or an objective measure?
Which, the excessive calls?
Yeah.
How is that defined?
That is a concern by the stakeholders, that it is subjective. We have a variance from stores that will from 0 to 350. So what we would do is we would obviously look at those stores that are having a high volume in comparison to the other stores throughout the city, and then we would obviously work with them. But
let's come back to that, because I think if you go through your other alternatives, maybe that'll answer some of the questions.
Alternative B would be to adopt the ordinance but make it applicable to new builds and remodels, which is to grandfather the existing stores. Alternative C, we will be in January going online with a citizen online reporting system, which will allow citizens throughout the city to make a specific small and small thefts would be included, to make their own reports, get copies of the reports. That could be applicable in some of these circumstances where we would implement the online reporting system for offenses under, and I put 100, we could make that anything. We could make it $50, $25. That's for discussion. Where there's no viable information on the suspect, that would allow us to still capture the crime data, that it would still get onto our RMS system. It would still go to a detective. We could still track trends, but we wouldn't have to send those two officers out to take those reports. So that is an alternative. I do want to make a notation. This is not included in your package, because this was really sent by Circle K within the last couple days, and I think they're going to present here today. They have a recommendation of an option tiered or phased-in approach, where if you have excessive calls for service, phases of this ordinance would be implemented as you rise through that. So I did tell them that I would mention that.
Councilman Higgins.
Yeah, that was always been an issue that I've had, that we have stores that have had maybe one call for service in the last 10 years, yet we're asking them to install all these security measures when they currently don't have a problem. Which, you know, but that's tricky too. You want people to call, obviously. But I mean, if you base this off of your last years of data and do a tiered approach, so, you know, if you've had problems in the last few years, you've got to do eight, with not these eight, one through seven. Right. But if you haven't, then you just need to register, do this, and let us maybe do a review. You know, I mean, that tiered approach so that you're not penalizing the small stores that have great, great customers and never have a problem. But you definitely, you know, have the steps available to go and work with the ones.
Oh, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Do have problems. No, that's fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by this alternative C. Okay, so what you're saying is that for the real petty things, the donut run, since we seem to be got on that, the store could report that using this online system. We would have the information and basically accomplish the same thing we accomplished by sending an officer out there for that type of crime.
Correct.
And they would be able to report it in an easy way. I would imagine that they either have computers on site or through corporate or whatever, they can find a way to easily get on and report that. We can track data and spot trends so that, I mean, we don't want to diminish the donut run. If there's 50 of those going on, that becomes a problem.
Absolutely, and we still want to capture
and
that data.
Yeah, we still need that information because we don't want to ignore the petty crimes because petty crimes grow into big crimes. We do know that. And so I'm fascinated by that. So they can do that. That'll be in our base. And I would assume that we would incentivize that and say, hey, listen, if you participate in that, then whatever tiered system we have, that would accomplish our purpose, would it not, for at least that situation?
It would definitely be a benefit for the police department not having to put those resources into that.
Now, it seems like, though, we're talking about two different issues here, which also involve some of these other alternatives, because I think the council last time was pretty much in agreement that SEPTED requirements and SEPTED for new and remodels was, unless I'm remembering wrong, I thought we were pretty much unanimous in thinking that that was an appropriate measure. I think the industry even agreed to that, did they not? For remodels and new builds applying SEPTED principles?
Yeah, a lot of the input that we supports that, yes. And okay. A lot of the new builds are being built with these SEPTED principles.
Well, I mean, but as it relates to our ordinance, I think that that was something that the council agreed on, that part of this approach, which is to apply the SEPTED requirements to new builds and to remodels, that's something we would move forward with. Am I, Dennis, remembering that wrong, or is that, I thought that's what we agreed to. Well, I thought
you're
that
talking about SEPTED in general.
Yeah, as part of this convenience store thing, I thought that one thing we talked about was that that all of the things that we would include in here as far as design and visibility and everything would certainly apply to new builds and to remodels. And really what we're talking about are existing stores that are not in that design rebuild. Maybe I'm completely missing it, but I thought that's what we had agreed to. I'm getting a nod from Dina.
No, I thought that's what we discussed, that a new store would come in and abide by all the new ordinance requirements. But, again, we would look back on the older stores.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to compartmentalize, and because I don't know that there was a big debate over whether to apply the things you've talked about. We mentioned these as alternative, A, B, and the measures that we were talking about, the safety measures for new stores, as it related to SEPTED design and those things, I think we agreed that in any new ordinance that came forward that we would be willing and the council would be willing and the industry was okay with creating an ordinance that at the least included those requirements. Dennis?
And to that point, we did take those issues under consideration in terms of the committee discussion, but we're not grandfathering stores in.
Right.
The requirements are there for the visibility and all the safety requirements, but we created the safety valve to permit the stores to apply for a hardship exemption. For example, for a design issue where the stores are too small or in a strip center where it doesn't work, that they can have an alternate security plan to meet the same goals of this.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing again. I'm trying to remove something from the discussion table because it seems like these, whatever ordinance we end up having, that we will apply these design requirements to new builds and to remodels. So that's taken off the thought. Boy, I get a lot of blank faces, which means I am completely doing a bad job
of
explaining this.
That is my recollection.
My recollection, there was still a lot of things up in the air the last time we met. If that's the direction of the council today, let's start with today. If that's the council's direction is today,
okay. Let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
Does the council have a problem with applying the SEPTED principles to new builds and remodels? Okay, go ahead.
And again, because...
Not only those, but just right. Those are going to be part of it. Okay.
At least from my recollection of the discussion, I mean, we're trying to get at the very stores that are causing much of the problem today, and much of the problem is revolving around the security issues or measures that are in place or not in place at those stores. And there are things that the existing stores can do, particularly in terms of visibility and lighting and the camera issues, all those things that we're talking about that we believed as a committee most stores could comply with. But there are going to be issues where they couldn't, and particularly for design and size of the building.
Okay, but I'm trying to get to that point. What I'm trying to say is I don't disagree with it, but for new builds and for remodels, do we agree that these principles will apply for those? Okay? So we can stop debating whether those should apply to new builds and to remodels. Now let's get back to the situation you're talking about. Existing stores, and I think that's the real issue. What do we apply to existing stores? What requirements do we have on existing stores?
Under the proposed measure, and Chief, correct me if I'm wrong, all the measures would apply to existing stores. It would have 120 days to come into compliance. But there is also an option in there if, because of the nature of the building or design of the old store, they have the right to come in and request an alternate security plan outlining the measures that wouldn't work at that store, and the department would have the ability to look at the plan to see if it provides the equivalent safety issues and would provide an exception for them.
Which gets us back to the original thing we talked about last time, Councilmember Higgins. You got a guy who owner store hasn't had a major police item in 10 years, and we're going to require them to go in and do this. I mean, I guess that's the question I have.
Mayor, that's where the hardship exception comes in.
Well, that's not a hardship. Mm-mm. They haven't done anything. They've run a good business, and we're calling that a hardship.
The hardship is in complying with cost of compliance.
But why are we asking people who have presented no problem? This is where I get back to my original thing. Why are we asking people who have presented no strain on resources to have to go through a hardship process and all that just because we want to catch those few that we can identify, and we can identify the perpetrators? I'm still mixed as to why that blanket approach is what we want to do.
I think what the approach was to have a set of rules that everybody would have to follow, but then allow them to make, and we added the hardship to not just be monetary, but it could be something by design, or even in fact, if you are a store that doesn't meet all these requirements and you don't ever call the police because you don't ever have any crime, that we would make a hardship exception on that.
Rather than call it hardship, could we just include that in the ordinance? Say if you haven't had this in the last 10 years, you're excluded. I'm just throwing out an idea here.
And that's we just want to be careful that we're not encouraging people not to call us because they're afraid that they're...
Which gets to your alternative C, which I'm really fascinated with, which is the online reporting, and maybe if they report online, that wouldn't count. It wouldn't come into effect because once again, those are items we want to track.
Absolutely.
So we don't want to use our resources to. So we would encourage them to report.
Absolutely.
Councilmember Higgins.
And so that, Mayor, that's why I think when I mentioned earlier a tiered approach of the ordinance that would pick that up instead of saying it's a hardship and define it. You have these sets of criteria. If you're a store with 5 calls of service in the last 10 years, you do items 1 through 5, and you move on as the store has more issues. If you are the calls for service of 12 a week, well then, you need to move on, do all these things. I don't know,
there's some valid potential in that. The only thing, I caution is, if I'm at that brink of, if I call in one more time, I become second tiered, well, we're just not gonna call. You just gotta take that in consideration.
Let me get back to original, because I'm still wondering on this. It seems like we have two sort of sub-issues here. One is the use of police resources. And those who call and we go out for the proverbial donor run. The other is the crime that is legitimate. God, that sounds weird, legitimate crime. But it's crime that we want to, that certain stores, because of their lack of action, because of they consider these petty crimes a cost of doing business, they either are unwilling or unable, mostly unwilling, to solve the situation. You know, what's the breakdown of that? I mean, how much do we have of the stores that just say, hey, you know what, I don't care. I'm not going to move my beer because I'll stand a couple beer runs a week because I can sell more beer if I put it up front, and so I lose a couple of cases of beer. I mean, big deal. I mean, those are the ones, and then they call us to come out. So basically, they've included us in their cost of business, and we're saying that's not a cost of business we're willing to pay. What's the breakdown between those two? I mean, and which one do you think we're really focusing on?
Mayor, I would say that it's a combination. And yes, it is. One of the requirements is to net your beer, and the industry's recommendation is that that's not effective. With SEPTET principles, it's a layer of protection. It's a layer of security. Locking the coolers at night so nobody can go in there. The industry feels that that's not a effective deterrent, but we do. So, in their eyes, it's.
Do they feel it's not an effective deterrent, or that it's a cost that they don't want to incur?
It's both. They believe that someone will break the cooler to get in if they lock it. So. And I guess our
that sort of elevates. You got that kind of criminal that's going to come in there with a crowbar and break a thing. That to me is the kind of guy we want off the street.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And our approach in all crime prevention is layered of protection. Just like your car, you know, you lock it, you put a club, you put an alarm, all those things. If they want your car, they probably smash the window and take it. But it's layers of protection that will deter most criminals. And that's really what a lot of this. Really, this whole ordinance is just layers of protection, lighting and visibility and alarms and things like that. So there is a cost of doing business that I believe that the industry feels that, you know, we're going to put the beer out front because that's advertising, and we're going to put the displays and cover up the windows because it's advertising. So, and we've discussed that openly, and we understand that, and we're just trying to find that middle ground. You can put your posters on the wall, but don't cover the entire front of the store.
And I guess our feeling is we don't care if it's your cost of business. That's your right. Don't make it our cost of your business. And I guess that's what we're trying to decide, is at what point do we cross that line where their business decisions are creating a burden on the community.
And we're trying to maximize our resources, absolutely.
Okay. Let's get back, and I don't want to... Once again, your alternative C with the online appointment. What do you think that would accomplish in the realm of this overall discussion of accomplishing what we want to accomplish?
That would be more a benefit to the police department than it would to the actual because we got to continue to monitor the crime and address the crime. It would be more of a benefit to the police department because we're not having to send a physical police officer taking that him or her off the street. That can get reported online. And that's really the purpose of the online, not just convenience stores, but overall, for citizens to make a smaller level police reports without having to send a physical officer out there. So that's probably more of a benefit for us. I know the industry, we've discussed how they would do that. A lot of their stores do not have online access at the stores, but there is some discussion of they could report that back to their corporate. And
well, I'm assuming they do report that back to corporate on a daily basis. I can't imagine that a store would not report theft to their corporate on a daily basis if there were incidents.
I know that they do. I don't know the exact manner. That would have to be something we would have to work out.
Councilmember Finter.
You know, I'm watching this. I've kept an open mind, and I'm still looking at the big picture as the previous discussion. This is just one small aspect. Big box retailers, emergency response on fire for the business model that some folks use that require a lot of city services. So I look at under stakeholders' concerns, requests, designated board. I read in the paper that through the hotel motel potential ordinance coming up that there was a board. Maybe, you know, the possibility of a board. So my question first, and then I'll have a comment. Why wouldn't we do that under this, or what's the apprehension about having a board that would be similar to the hotel motel kind of thing coming?
The board under the hotel motel, I believe, is an advisory group. What's the discussion in this is a board to hear the hearings for appeals. I think that's the difference, where the board that the industry for the convenience store is requesting, right now, any appeals for variances would go to the city manager or designee to determine whether they would grant appeals to citations or violations. They're requesting that goes to a board of industry so I guess that's the difference, is say really a decision making for violations compared to hotel motel, where they're more of an advisory role.
Okay, I appreciate that clarification. Comment, if I could, Mayor. I'm hoping that we, as these processes come through, that we kind of develop a framework that can be utilized in so many different areas that I see. You know, since being elected a couple of years ago, I've attended ComStat, and I've heard over the years, these 2 years now, the frustration. I think there's been significant outreach to the industry. Please work with us. We've had contact folks, and it has gone not well. And my sense is that there's been just absolute pushback no desire to kind of work with us. So it's kind of interesting. I see now in the last couple of days, one of the industry providers or businesses has come back with a tier, and I appreciate that. What it feels like is kicking and screaming and fighting all the way through this process. And it's a little frustrating. So when they're looking for consideration and the industry, my thought process would be somebody better get a lot more proactive, because you're going to bring, not my desire, but you bring down a lot of regulation when you won't work within the system to try and find some successful ways to handle the situation. So again, looking in the broad sense, a nice framework that can be applied in other areas with lots of communication between whatever industry we're dealing with, if that's boards or whatever, and being able to find a partnership solution. But if you're unwilling to come to the table, then you're probably going to get saddled with regulation, which is unfortunate. So thank you.
Mayor and Council, if I could just comment on that. One of the most positive things out of this is we have really been working together on this. And I would say maybe that was a thought a year and a half ago. But we have started working together the different industries, security, they've met with our staff. And so it has created that sense of partnership. Obviously, we just want to find the rules that we can all deal with.
Councilmember Summers.
I had to switch back over to the non-tech version because my computer was so enamored with this conversation, it just quit. Why is alternative C an alternative and not part of the overall ordinance recommendation? I don't think that's an alternative. It sounds like something that could be inclusive in your recommendations for.
And I totally agree. These aren't all independent. You could have a combination of C with A or C with B, absolutely.
So,
and that's a piece of technology that is we just got approval through council.
So it's just your definition of alternative. We have various options that we can pull in or pull out, put in, that kind of thing.
Correct.
What I'm used to seeing on these is alternative A. You got A or B or C, and C is usually do nothing. But
and like I said at the onset, we really are looking for direction from council, because this is something that is, we're trying to find, at least the police department is trying to find something that is effective but yet balanced.
I got to apologize, because I think I sort of messed this conversation up by jumping in and doing some things. So I apologize for getting you off track and sort of, I think, muddling the picture, which I shouldn't have done.
Again,
yeah. I guess I have some strong feelings. And it's not about letting those who are creating problems off. Because I think we have some businesses out there that are creating both an unsafe situation and a burden on us because of their unwillingness to adhere to safe principles. I don't think there's any doubt that we have that. The data shows that. And I think in our discussions, we've seen that. And those are the businesses that I would think we should be targeting, because I think they're not only the root of the problem, but they're the ones that require regulation. I hope we don't fall into a thing where if you don't speak up, you get regulated, because we should be looking at real problems that protect the community. And I think that's a real problem. I think the issue I have with this approach is that we've taken the blanket approach, which is in order to catch or solve that one specific problem, we figured we have to cast a wide net and bring what I would believe are innocent parties into this. And the attitude is, well, you know, that's just the way it is. I really feel uncomfortable with that, because if you have a good business operator who is doing this, they shouldn't be burdened with either a regulation or the necessity to come to petition government to not regulate them, which is what I believe the hardship thing is. I mean, we sort of cast that off as, oh, well, it's a minor irritation. No, it's not. It's a big deal. And if we have someone who's a good business, you have an owner-operator who spends 12 to 16 to 18 hours a day in their store, they are the surveillance system, they don't have a problem, those kind of businesses we should leave alone and let them succeed and thrive. Now, I don't know how you accomplish both things. I think you've come up with some good alternatives here that would help us to work to maintain public safety, but I'm still not comfortable with the fact that we're saying everybody is covered by these new regulations when we, by our own admission, recognize there's only a few bad actors out there, and it is an imposition and it is a huge cost. And even if this person has to leave their store that they run, and I think there's several of these, to go in and work through the bureaucracy, and there's no way we can make it an easy hardship process. It's just not going to exist. That's sort of that's an antithesis to how government operates. I have an issue with that. I think I don't know how we go after the real perpetrators, and we set something up, but that's where I still have an issue with this. Councilmember Summers.
I think we've struck on an issue that befuddles this council and many others when trying to make policy. We could point to individual stores, whatever ordinance we're trying to do, and we could say that these stores or these massage parlors, which was our last ordinance, or these hotels are the real problem. And so let's go after them. And then we get pinged for singling people out. You're singling out my business, and then they call our attorney, or their lawyer calls their attorney, and they're picking on me. So then we take a more broad-based approach and laying down a policy, a set of rules that seem to make sense to try to reduce crime in all of those facilities. And we get folks saying that, why are you picking on me? Because I didn't do anything wrong. And no matter which way you go, you're going to get hit with a club. It's just pick your club. And I think the reason we go with a blanket approach is the idea of fairness. I'm concerned that some of our suppositions, perhaps, are fallacy. I think the issues that we have is when we looked at this design, and you brought in the best from other communities as well, and you've looked at industry standards, and you've looked at the convenience stores that do it right, and you didn't just make this stuff up. You know what leads to crime, what encourages criminal activity. Dark alleys, covering your windows with product or displays, the lack of security cameras, open targets. They're common sense things that you know, that you teach your children. Don't walk down a dark alley in the middle of the night, because that's, criminals hide in dark alleys. And it's things that convenience stores are doing that brings it to themselves. I would be shocked if you could bring me an anecdote, show me a convenience store that has its windows covered, has no cameras, has no security, and has is wrapped, whatever, and never is. They're not creating a problem. I'd be shocked if you could do that. But if you could do that, bring it to me. Then I know that some of what has been suggested here
is true. My suspicion is that those, and I've seen some of the stats, so it's more than a suspicion, that those convenience stores that are the problem, those handfuls that are creating the vast majority of problems, are the ones that have that aren't following these type of guidelines. And the ones who aren't creating a problem already follow these to begin with and shouldn't have that much of an issue. And that's why there's some kicking and screaming, because we took the very best of what the good convenience stores do, and we're trying to codify it so that we reduce the impact of the community. If this was just a donut run, and that donut run, first of all, I'd tell your officers to start buying their own donuts. No, that was mean. But if it was just a donut run, that'd be one thing. But it's not just the donut run. It's the incidents where watch crime TV or whatever it is, and you see what happens in some of these stores. And look in the background. Product in the window, thing is covered, and somebody gets it on cell phone, or maybe they do have a small system to record it. And the violence in these robberies is unbelievable. And we're going to respond to them. And it started with a small robbery, and it elevated into violence. It starts with a beer run and ends up with somebody slamming into somebody else because they chugged a case of Bud Light. Root of all evil, so a police officer once told me. So I this has taken 18 months to get to us because of a lot of work that has gone into it. I think the many pages of revisions that were discussed here talks about how we've worked with at least portions of the community on addressing real issues, and when it did come down to having some legitimate concerns, we added enough flexibility in having stores. If you're in an old building that can't conform, then there you can put together, with the help of the police department, a security plan, and that is the fallback. That is the flexibility to where if you can't manipulate your infrastructure, then this is how you can reduce the crime. But this is really about protecting customers. This is really about protecting our people, reducing the burden on police department, but it's really about the folks that walk into these stores should feel secure. And it's a damn shame that we have to bring up what some of those good practices are, but our statistics bear out why we're doing this. Otherwise, we sure the heck wouldn't be spending the better part of a Thursday morning on one of the most beautiful days we've had in Arizona, stuck in this room listening to some fine folks on our police department. Thank you, Mayor.
Well, Councilman Wright, first of all, I think you argued my position, which is we should concentrate on those people that are the problems.
Well,
if we talk fairness, what you're saying is that who are we being fair to? You're more concerned about being fair to the perpetrators of this than you are to the people who are running a good business. If we have that old building that, even if they have some of these situations, if they have no crime, why are we forcing them to come up with a plan to prevent crime that isn't happening? That's my question. The other thing is, I have a real problem when we depend upon anecdotal things to create policy or to create law, when we have data available. And I guess we're sort of arguing the finer points, and I want to make sure that I am absolutely in support of regulating those businesses that create an unsafe situation, that have shown that they attract crime, and that they have created a burden on the city. Absolutely no problem with that. To me, they either fix the situation themselves, or we, because it does create that problem. I do have a problem when we take those situations which we have data that shows that they are creating problems, and in order for somehow not to be unfair to them, we cast a wide net and we pick up legitimate business who are doing a great job, maybe using alternative methods. I don't know. The proof is in the fact that they have had no crime, which means they're doing something right. And I just want to make sure that we don't, in the sense of fairness, be completely unfair to those people who are doing us a favor by creating a safe environment and not creating a burden. And so, I, you know, we're not really arguing against the end result. I think what we're talking about is how do we target those businesses that are truly creating a problem. And I think where I separate is, I don't think we throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's where it seems like we're going. I think there is a way, and I really am enamored with your option C, which seems to me to create a program where we can track and we can tell where these petty crimes are coming, because those, you know, you have a lot of petty crimes, they do create an unsafe situation. And I think at what level, and the question is, at what level then do we step in and say, listen, you are creating a bad situation. I just have a real issue with casting this across the entire city, trying not to offend somebody. I have no problem with offending a business that is creating an unsafe situation and is refusing to adapt safe standards. I have no problem offending them, because they're offending me. They're offending this community. And they're sucking from this community through their business practices. And to me, we shouldn't be worried about that. Those are people we don't want in our community. We want people who run good businesses, clean businesses, safe businesses. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I understand what you're saying, but don't lose sight of the fact that in addition to crime prevention, what this measure also does is aids in criminal apprehension. And you may have those businesses that have a great record for 10 years, but they have a crime. They will have crimes. They can have crimes that occur in the future. And many of the measures that we're putting in here are also designed so that when a crime does occur, it assists our police department in terms of catching the bad guys. And so it's both, there are twin purposes, really, crime prevention, actually three purposes, crime prevention, apprehension of bad guys, and creating a safe environment for people either who work in the stores or who patronize the stores. I do appreciate the option C, the alternative C, the online reporting system. I think that should be part of the ordinance. It's not in lieu of the ordinance. I think it works well. It's part of it. I also, with regard to the additional security measure section, I have no problem with removing that from the ordinance. That wasn't in the ordinance when we started. I think it got put in because of discussion we had at the committee level, but I understand the concern of the industry. So, you know, if we're looking for where people want to go, I'm certainly comfortable with taking it out. I'd like to have the alternative C as part of the ordinance. But again, let's remember what we're trying to accomplish in terms of a safe workplace, safe shopping environment, crime prevention, but also criminal apprehension. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Simmons, do you have a comment?
Mayor, I don't think I made your point. I think you missed mine. The police department has been using the data, the best practices from the best businesses in our community and others, the best practices in other communities who have adopted similar ordinances, to create an ordinance that gets at the heart of what encourages a criminal activity. Those are how dark it is around it, the lack of cameras, the lack of security, and the rats and decreased visibility. And those were brought from the best business. The fact is that the statistics would show that the businesses that adhere to more of those things, like businesses that do more of the SEPTED principles, have fewer crimes because they don't encourage those crimes. That is statistically driven, and that is what's been placed in this ordinance. In addition to that, in recognition of the fact that many of our small businesses in the older parts of town or in the older buildings in town that have reused them, you're not going to be able to open up new windows. There are going to be significant structural concerns. And it's just going to be financially impossible to deal with that. In recognition of that, flexibility has been added to this so that they can do a plan so that they don't incur those large costs, but can do other things that'll help. It may not be as effective, but it adds some of that flexibility, and that was my point.
If I'm not mistaken, last time we said that of the top 10 perpetrators, I mean, they accounted for a hugely disproportionate number of calls.
Correct, Mayor and Council. Out of all the convenience store calls for service, 8,840, and the total for the top 10 was responsible for 4,110.
So the top 10 accounted for all, for over 50% of the calls?
Correct.
And how many convenience stores do we have in Mesa?
150.
So we have 150 stores in Mesa, and we have 10 stores that are accounting for over 50% of the calls?
Correct.
So we do have anecdotal data that it's not, I mean, I guess, I think this is where we ended last time. The question is, why don't we get an ordinance that handles, if we could get an ordinance that that eliminates crime in those 10 stores, guess what? Without doing anything else, we've cut 50% of our calls. I'm trying to figure out where we advanced from that last discussion, where we know where the crime is. We know who is not doing what they want, and yet we have an ordinance that, once again, applies to all 150 when we know that 10 account for over 50% of the crimes. I guess that's my question, and it's been since the last meeting. Yeah, Councilmember.
Well, Mayor, I think we are there. And when you talk about going into maybe a phased approach where, you know, you'd like everybody to be registered, what's wrong with that? It's free, right? It's probably online, perhaps, or a thing in the mail. It's not a big burden on somebody. And then just to stair-step through, because the other 150 still have 4,000, you know, is there another top 20 that account for 10%, you know? So, I mean, this ordinance in a tiered approach of, what's the word, implementation, seems like, you know, they've done the work and it's, you know, good to go.
Is it a tiered approach other than we have a apply and haphazard, or would you apply some sort of tiered approach?
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting, that we actually look into some type of tiered approach where, you know, everybody, you know, when you look at, you know, you'd want everybody to register, right, with no annual fee, just to know who they are, who the manager is, and then walk down through the things that make sense for everybody. That would, like, be a no-cost thing, and then as, you know, you make up something. And it can be this year. You'd have to look back over the last 10 years, right? And maybe it's one of those, we look over the last 10 years and keep dropping off the 10th year and move that timeline over, so you don't have the people going, oh, this year if I call, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be in the higher zone. No, we're always going to look over your last, I don't know, pick some, 3 to 5. Well, so you're always, you know what, we're getting better, but you're still too high. You know what I mean? And it moves along.
And, you know, and we'll get to Councilmember Andrews. You know, we can sit here all morning, and if we wanted to, we would. And I don't want to micromanage your thing. But, no, I go back to what Councilmember Finner says. To me, this isn't about this ordinance. It's about our approach to these kind of problems. And I agree with Councilmember Finner. We're going to have a lot of others. We have the massage parlors. We seem to keep having these issues come up. And I guess my commentary is meant toward how we approach as a city and as these kind of issues. And it seems like the general approach has always been the heavy hammer that applies to all, when we really should be focusing on the problem and trying to come up with some, whether it's a tiered approach, whether it's this, whether it's alternative AC. You know, frankly, that doesn't bother me as much as the idea that we have to increase overall regulation, increase overall bureaucracy to try and handle a problem, which I think we could handle with a much more focused, detailed approach. And so, you know, whether you do it with option A, C, D, whatever, anything that can reduce the burden on our businesses and truly make us, you know, and I hate this term when we talk about business friendly, this is not being business friendly. In an attempt to be community friendly, we're creating huge, huge burdens on business. And we do that with a lot of areas. And to talk about what Councilman Finter did, or bring that up, I think there will be other areas that will come up that will be similar to this, and that we have an identified problem. The question is, how do we approach it? So I don't know where we go from here. Councilman Richard, you want to wrap this up and we can move on?
No, I like this conversation, actually.
Well, these are important conversations.
30 to me. Sorry. How many of the 150 convenience stores will be compliant on day one? How many of our 150 stores already fit in the ordinance? Do we know?
I believe there's going to be some things that are going to be like, nobody is netting their beer. So, I mean, they're going to have to go out.
Well, what about locking their, I mean, there's some that don't have floor display of beer that lock their coolers.
You could probably answer that better, Patty.
Do you have an estimate?
I don't, but I think most of them have floor displays. So I'd say that a very few would be completely in compliance, but a lot of them would just be minor things and they would be completely in compliance.
A lot. I mean, do we I think kind of in order to understand this approach about how we're going to phase this or tier this, we need to know who are the good players, who are really close that aren't going to have to suffer under this regulatory burden that the mayor describes. And then how, because my guess is that, you know, 75% of them have to do a few minor tweaks and they're in compliance. And there's going to be the 10 others that are going to have the burden and that it's really going to drill down to the bad actors. That's my estimation. We have people here from the industry, but
we have to do an inspection of all of them.
Right.
And there are going to be some of the bigger players that are going to have to ask for a hardship due to some variances. And we would grant those because they're practicing. And I'll give an example. The 4-foot rule for visibility, this particular company is at 4 foot 6 inches. So they would have to change all of their displays in the front to come to that 4 inches. That would obviously be a hardship.
Well, why don't we just write the ordinance saying 4 foot 6 inches?
You know, it was originally at 3.
You know, what does 6 inches get you?
We raised it to 4, and that's where we were good. And then they came back later and said, hey, we're actually at 4.5. And we're trying just to set standards, because if we go to 4.5, then the next person's going to come and say we're at 5.
One of the things as we've discussed the changes in the zoning ordinance is we need to be out in business, if we're going to be business friendly, using the term, if we're going to be out, we need to know what the industry standards are. And if there's a certain amount of industry standard, for example, we were talking about the length of RVs that we could park on the side of a house. Well, you know, if we arbitrarily set a certain length, but the industry standard is 2 feet longer, then everything they're selling on their lots right now is going to be out of compliance. So if we know what the industry standards, or, you know, even what kind of display things that they sell for the convenience store industry, if we have an understanding of those things, then you can write an ordinance that already matches with what they're buying, what they're implementing, and then next time they buy new equipment and they're buying stuff off the shelf, they don't have to worry about complying with our ordinance because we know what the industry is already providing. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Richens. Mm-hmm. It's all over the board, from covering your whole walls to 4 feet to 6 feet. One of the discussion was, do we just put a line of sight? But then that can be really subjective also.
Line of sight.
Exactly, from where you're at. So it was very difficult. So that's where we came up with raising it. A SEPTED standard is 3 feet. That's kind of a national standard. We actually raised it a foot to allow them to put more displays.
And all new buildings and remodels would have to comply with that, the SEPTED standard, the 4-foot standard. Okay.
Yeah, I largely agree with the approach that we're going here. I've been in some of these stores. I go to many of them in my district regularly just to see the conditions that have been described for this. And I see, you know, stores that do have their windows completely blocked. In fact, I've been in stores that have coolers blocking half the door going in, and I don't know if fire needs to take a visit to those folks, but, you know, I really think that we've done a lot of work on this. It's a reasonable approach. I think there's a little bit more work we can do to get it business friendly, but I largely agree with Councilmember Kavanaugh, and as I've visited businesses, as I've talked to my neighbors, this is a real concern for them. So,
Councilmember Summers.
Just because you set a standard doesn't mean you're not being business friendly. It wasn't, you know, we've been doing a lot in public safety and on this council, try to clean up a lot of the mess. The massage parlors was the last one. We set an even standard across the board that required even the legitimate businesses to do a few more things. They were minor. They had to have their, I think their manager has to be posted. They have to have their licenses posted. Other than that, they were pretty much well within compliance. They had legitimate massage therapists on staff, and that's what they were doing. The ones we were after were the ones that were, had the urban walkers doing some extra services that weren't on the list. Those are the ones we were after. And by setting a minimum standard, it's amazing how that is cut down. For very little money, we're still business friendly. Just because you set a standard doesn't mean you're not business friendly. But I do want to get to a point for individual businesses
So I'm going to turn to our question over to our attorney, our esteemed attorney, and ask, can we single out individual businesses? Is that possible, or are we getting into a dark area there? And secondly, what do you think, this is the first time I've heard this idea of a tiered approach from Councilmember Higgins. How does that, I don't remember it at least. Is that something that we could follow instead?
We have looked at this issue, and on your first question, Councilmember Summers, we don't want to single out individual businesses, but can we develop a tiered approach with objective criteria that would trigger different requirements? I think, yes, we can. We've had Christine Stutz take a look at that issue, and if you want her to come up, she'd be happy to talk to you about that. It could be based on calls of service. There could be other objective criteria we could look at.
On Councilmember Higgins' idea? She's looked at Councilmember Higgins' idea?
This is Christine Stutz from our office.
It's your idea now. Random thoughts of genius. Okay.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. We have explored a similar approach. We've talked about that particular aspect. We haven't drafted up anything to that effect, but we have had discussions about whether or not objective criteria could be created. I think the largest concern, I don't want to speak on behalf of the department, but the largest concern from their perspective was the disincentive to call then. So because primarily all the statistical data would be based on calls for service. So that really isn't an option that has been thoroughly explored at this point, but from a legal perspective, it is something that you could create. Again, there's just sort of a potential disincentive to doing so. So,
what if we created an issue sort of like what they do with points and licenses? You know, photo radar. I don't think that counts against your point on your license. I didn't mean to do that. What I meant was, you know, for example, if they use this online reporting, it doesn't factor into a deal. It actually is an incentive for them to call. And for certain types of crimes, it wouldn't count against those kind of things if they use the way of doing it. And I mean, now once again, I'm just looking at a way to incentivize people to continue to report crime, which meets our objective, which is, you know, we want them to report in a way that doesn't create a burden on us.
What you're talking about is separating the petty crimes versus the public, the crimes that are just versus.
I get the disincentive when you have a benchmark and all of a sudden people say, I'm just not going to call. Well, we want them to report the petty crimes, the donut runs, but we don't want there to be a disincentive for them to report that. And that's why I like the online type of thing. And if we said, listen, report it, that's not going to go into anything that counts against you. It's just for us to look at because it is petty crime.
But
yeah, go ahead.
But if the people that are, you're going to use the ordinance to the full, all 22 steps, those are already people that are going to be doing the ordinance completely or complying with it. It's not the small store, right? The small store that has had no calls for service won't be doing all of these. So it's not I'm trying to get to the point where you were just saying, is it a disincentive? Probably not when you look at their numbers over the last 10 years. You know, it's still an average of X amount per year. And I think if you look back over years, you know what I mean, you move that timeline as you go, it might not be a big issue about or a disincentive.
Well, I think the way is if we can get them to use the online thing, boy, it looks like we all win in that. Councilmember Richens, I think, and then we'll go Ms. Spinner.
I think we need to map the top 10 here a little bit. One idea that was suggested by the peanut gallery out there is that if some of these convenience stores are located within CDBG eligible areas, crime prevention is eligible use in the CDBG program. And so maybe there's a situation where we can create some, you know, get a partner that can help us with this process and have an incentive for the businesses to, you know, a little carrot for getting them to apply. So you get a little bit of money to the business, they achieve crime prevention, we get our goals achieved. You know, and CDBG is typically in the areas that most of the crime seems to be occurring. And so maybe we have a win for all this. And I don't think it would be a program that would cost very much because you'd hit the top 10 and then you'd work through your second 10 the following year. And I think you could work through all these businesses in short order and get everybody in compliance and you're done.
Councilmember Summers?
I forgot about that, Councilmember Richards. I actually had suggested that now's the time. CDBG will be doing their grants. We did map some of those. Many of them, not all, but many of them were in CDB eligible areas, and I had suggested, if PD recalls, that we set up a grant to help fund some of these changes. So we need to put that on the front burner and turn up the heat a little bit.
Applications are already in, so
okay.
We'd have to amend next year. Next year, or if there's a crime prevention program in there, maybe we can figure out a way to do okay. it.
So maybe we need to do a time frame, but we need to work on that.
Let's move on. I'm trying to think what kind of information direction you've got. Let's start where I think we all agree. I think we all agree that SEPTED applying to whatever the ordinance that comes out, SEPTED applying to new builds and remodels, and you can define what level you reach substantial remodels. Is that, everyone agree with that? No, that's not the only thing. I'm just saying, somehow I'm completely missing this. I'm just saying that's an area we all agree on, because we don't agree on how these apply to existing businesses. But we all agree that these should apply. If someone walks in the door tomorrow to file an application to build a C-store, there are going to be standards that they're going to be required. Come on. We all agree on that, right? Okay. That's what I want to get to. If someone comes in and they want to completely remodel a building, they're going to be held to a standard that are based on SEPTED. Do we all agree on that? Okay. Can we all agree that I'm fascinated by how we might apply this automatic online reporting? Is that something that people want implemented or integrated in the law as an incentive for everyone to report, that hopefully could accomplish our basis? Not as a cure-all, not as an answer-all, because we still have some other issues I think we need to get through. Is that something that people agree with?
Well, I don't think it's an incentive. I think it should be a requirement. Well, okay, that's two different things.
But I mean, to utilize that.
But Mayor, I'm not even sure why it's considered an alternative.
That's what I mean.
We're going to do it.
Right.
We have not set the policies on it yet, on thresholds of what type of crimes.
Oh, okay.
But I think we can integrate that. Rather than just saying, here's a tool that's available, I think what we would do is require it that they use this tool, because once again, getting back to where we started, one of our primary objectives in this is to reduce the use of our resources. And if we can get people to use resources such as online reporting that don't require a police officer going out, don't we win? So I'm saying integrate that in whatever requirement we have as part of the solution. I mean, I have no problem telling ABC Convenience, if you have a part thing, report it online. And how that works out as far as requiring that or having a disincentive for them to call the police, using that instead of calling a police officer out, I think we'll let you guys work that out. But can we include that new tool as part of the requirements? Okay. Now then we get back to the meat of the matter, and as to whether we're going to tier this, how we apply it, whether it's blanket white or whatever.
What I hear from the council is everybody, there's support for alternative B, which essentially says that the ordinance that is before you, except for the right to require additional security measures, would apply to all the new and remodeled buildings. Everybody agrees with that.
Yes.
So we could bring an ordinance next week, whatever, that would be the same ordinance, but it would be at least under alternative B, would only be required for those for new builds and remodels. I know there's others who feel more than that, but at a minimum, that would be part of an ordinance. The other alternative or other element is also requiring, once we have the system up and running, the utilization of the online reporting system, and we'll have to develop the criteria for offenses.
And figuring out what happens if people don't use it. Maybe it could be like a false alarm kind of a deal where, you get multiple false alarms. If you continue to call the police department for donut runs instead of using that, maybe there's some incentive we can give or disincentive we can give to that. Think through that.
So then the next element that I think is really up for debate is the application of alternative A. And I guess there's council members who seem to be in support of adopting the ordinance that it would apply to all existing businesses. So because of B, we don't have to say future. The B covers the future. So it's really existing businesses regardless, whether they're in the worst of the worst or the best of the best as far as applying these practices of crime prevention. Others would suggest that maybe there's either, I've heard either this tiering concept or, yeah, the tiering concept or not doing it all. And I don't know how we're going to resolve that today because it seems to be quite a...
Well,
I'm
let
not
me...
Sure. We have to bring the ordinance, I guess my proposal, we have to bring the ordinance back to count. We have to bring an ordinance back for the future application. Does council want to then make the decision whether that section applies to future or existing? I think the tiering concept, I think I'd like to get some feedback on that because that would take some effort for us to go back. We couldn't necessarily just take the ordinance as it is. We'd really have to go back and establish the
criteria. Can I maybe make it, because I'm probably the chief perpetrator in creating this problem. Probably, yeah. Second. No vote on that one because I know it would be unanimous. I guess my hang-up is with the hardship and forcing people to come and prove that they're a hardship. I'm fundamentally opposed to that. If we could come up with a different process that is much easier for people, that doesn't force them to prove that they are a hardship, I mean, that's sort of offensive to business owners. I'm speaking with a bias as someone who owned a business and dealt with government, and to force me, who when I've been a good thing, to prove that I've been a good operator is just offensive. If we could come up with a system that makes it much easier for someone to come in and not have to go through a hearing, not have to go through something like that, if you can work on something like that, I could support that. Because I think that's, as we come down, that's where the real big is. How do we apply it to existing business? I think we agree on 90% of everything else. It's just how do you apply it to existing businesses?
Do you want to look at the tier approach?
And the tier approach would be fine.
Do you want to have them look at that and report back?
Yeah, let's look at those two things. Coming up with this, get rid of the word
hardship,
and I know maybe the lawyers say that, yeah, I think we can get around that legally and not say you're in a hardship situation. Because if you're in a compliant mode, if you run a clean store but you're in an old building that happens to have a 5-foot instead of 4-foot, that's not a hardship. We keep saying it's a hardship. We should give them credit for being a good store, and that should be the end of it. If they have other alternative mitigating security issues, and it should be easy for them to come in and show us that. So work on that a little bit. Uh-oh, blank face.
Sorry, Mayor.
I failed again. Yeah.
No, I just wanted to ask a question because I understand what you're describing, but are you contemplating also then removing the hardship exception from the overall?
No, I think the concept. Piece? I think the concept is the same because once again, if we're trying to hit those that are bad actors, the idea is that you're gonna bring some people into that net. I think the thing is that it creates what I believe is an unreasonable burden on those good actors to prove that they're good actors, and that's really what we're saying with the hardship. Come and prove to us what a lousy position you're in, or come and prove to us what. I mean, that to me is just, and when we say, well, that's easy, no, it's not easy. If someone has to take time off from work or hire an attorney, and that's what we're going to get to, because these are make or break decisions for many of these businesses. If we can just simplify that and make it easy and not treat it as a hardship, but treat it as, you know, we have good actors. Because frankly, if we have a store, and this is where I'm getting. If we have a store that is a magnet for crime and they block their windows and maybe they are at 5 feet instead of 4 feet, we shouldn't care if it's a hardship. That is an unsafe situation. So it's not really a hardship. That's just an unsafe situation. And I don't care if it costs a lot of money because the community is paying a huge cost in the fact that you can't walk in and be safe. We have police burdens and those kind of things. So we should focus on, and that's why I like the actual experience and the operations. Make it as easy as possible. Come back with some ideas on that.
But Mayor, let me clarify, because I'm concerned when I read the section on hardship, at least as my reading of it, has to do with financial.
Right.
Okay, so, but that's not, you weren't speaking of financial concerns.
No.
The idea is here is that it gives an exception to allow for consideration if this is going to create an undue financial hardship to the operation of the convenience store to comply with this ordinance, that there are exceptions that can prove up that this is going to be, and it gives them an alternative. What I hear you're speaking more to about was really the excessive calls for service.
Well, it's a combination.
I mean, it's a balancing. I mean, I bring out my last example. That creates the absurd situation that somebody could be a magnet for crime but have a hardship and say, it would cost me too much money to put in security system, this and this. Would they qualify for hardship exception? We haven't solved the problem. They come in and put these safety measures. They could literally qualify for a hardship exception and not fix the problem. And so I think it's a tiered thing. I think you have those middle of the road, which are, once again, the vast majority, where they have a few crimes and they really have a few things. It's a decision of whether I have to put in a security system, put a light in the back alleyway, or things like that. And it's a combination. So we're dealing we set up a rule that creates an absurd situation when we really should be focusing on those middle of the road type people that probably don't have to do a whole lot, but what they have to do does create a hardship situation. And the question is that will doing that solve the problem?
Well, and as I read this, I think if someone comes in, let's say they have a lot of activity, but they aren't able to come in compliance because they're smaller, it's a financial burden. As I read this, this allows for that flexibility for an alternative plan other than what's already included in this ordinance to be proposed and to be agreed to that gives them an exception from the specific requirements in this particular ordinance.
I think where we moved from is that was a blanket that I thought we removed. Are we saying
no? So that's why I want to try to clarify.
Okay, and I would be in favor if someone came in and let's say it was that kind of situation, then we could move into the safety plan because once again our ultimate goal is public safety.
Right. And so I think the hardship exception as it is, I didn't write this, I just read. But as I understand it, this is a hardship that allows for undue financial hardship. So if someone comes in and says, I can't comply because of financial
hardship. Yeah, we added
or
that.
Or other hardships, okay. Then it allows this alternative security measures to be taken into place. There's another section which apparently has not a lot of support, which is to require additional security measures for excessive calls. That's a separate section, and I understand that's the one that...
Now, I think what we're saying, what if, rather than requiring that, what if we include that as an alternative? I'm just brainstorming here.
No, and actually, I understand the industry is opposed to that, at least what I'm hearing.
Creating as an alternative that they can choose? I mean, you can either do this or do that, as long as if you're a high-volume
right.
person, you can either make the physical changes... Or come up with a security plan. Work with us on a security plan that would mitigate those physical limitations.
So, but doesn't that then open the door to everyone to come up with their own security measures and claim?
No, the security measures are what the police department is defined. We have pretty well defined standards, don't we? I mean, for security measures, I mean, we've talked about it. Things like beer displays. Things,
sure.
I mean, those are the security measures. Take the things out from the front of the store. Move your beer. Do stuff like that.
So, if you're a convenience store. And you have applied these, I guess that's what I'm trying to understand is because this deals with excessive calls after you've applied the SEPTEB practices and they're still having problems, or are you suggesting that they don't trigger compliance with this ordinance until after they've succeeded?
No, the first thing is what I think.
I think we go back to the original objective, which is we want to create a safe environment. We want to do it in a way that recognizes the burden that we would be placing on good actors, good businesses, and so we want to create an alternative. Listen, if you have certain practices in place and you don't have those calls, boom. It's not a financial hardship, it's just that you've met our objectives, and so it's an alternative rather than a requirement. And I think that was the problem with the industry, which I think has some validity to it, is that it was a requirement. So you force people who are already doing things right, who already had sound practice and everything, to go through another administrative bureaucratic measure to prove that they were right. And I don't know how you get around that. You're right. We're not going to solve that today.
Yeah,
it seems to me that's where the
yeah,
at least
the
problem.
I'm still confused because the premise of all of this is that regardless of whether you're the best as far as managed convenience store or you're the worst of the worst, this ordinance would apply to everyone under alternative A. Then it provides a provision that even after that convenience store continues to have excessive calls, then other security measures would have to be employed. So that's the way it's laid, and I want to start with that assumption, or that's the basis of what's in front of us. Now, what's being questioned, and it's being in parentheses, is this: after applying the recommendations or applying the ordinance, the requirements of this ordinance, that convenience store has what is determined excessive calls for service, then the police chief can come in and require additional measures above and beyond what's even included here. But that's the part that's being proposed to be dropped from the ordinance. So I guess I think there's a philosophical kind of debate here about whether or not all convenience stores that are out there today, existing or remodels or future, they would have to comply with the terms of this ordinance. And that's really kind of, I think, where the discussion is. I understand. So, or are we trying to figure out a way to create some kind of, as long as you stay in the lower quartile of calls for service, we determine some calls for service that are acceptable. You can continue as you are today, but if you experience continued or increased calls and you didn't migrate above some number that we're going to have to come up with, and I'm kind of nervous about that, frankly, then it would have to be subject to these requirements.
Let me ask you something real quick. Are there certain basic, easy things? Like, I'm just thinking about blocked windows. I mean, everybody can comply with that if they really want to. I understand it may be an inconvenience for convenience stores who are old, but is that a safety measure that would increase this visibility thing, being able to look into a store?
Correct. The ability to look in, the ability for the customer.
I mean, that's something that, you know, all you got to do is take the signs down or move the refrigerator that's blocking the window.
For some stores, it would be really easy. For others, it would be difficult because that's their product space. So for some, it would be easy. For some, it would be difficult.
Okay. Mayor Smith, I have a really good example of one of the stakeholders that asked me to actually tell you, everyone here today, this. I visited his store yesterday, and he has one wall of windows that's completely covered with stock. But it's because of the design of his building. He didn't build the building. It's in one of the strip malls.
Right.
And when we went in and looked, to us, that's a wall now. Because he does have that clear line of sight from the door and the window beside it right to the cash register and on the other end, and I have pictures too. But he also has that clear line of sight from the other, except that he has posters and things. So we explained the entire ordinance to him because he is one of the small businesses that you were talking about that has very few calls for service. And he was upset and he wanted to know about this. We explained every part of the ordinance. We clarified things for him and explained that all he'd have to do would be take off those posters, that 4 foot to 7 foot area, and the posters off the window where he has like an actual drive up. And have to remove those so you could see out, and we explained why. And when we were done, he said, I support this ordinance. He said, I fully support it. Now I understand.
Well, but he wouldn't comply with the ordinance.
No, because he would be the hardship exception. That would be where he would just have to send us a letter saying what he needed to do, and so then we would come in and sign off on that.
Let me throw something out. That seems to me like a good example of where you could grandfather if you did with some basic standards. Is basically what you're saying. We're going to grandfather him if you do this easy thing, take the posters down, not block the windows, right?
Right, because once we grant that exception, that hardship exception, that stays. So some other person can't come in later and go, well, I don't agree with that. He gets to keep that. That's the way it's going to stay.
I know the semantics, but to me that's not a hardship. To me that's just, it's a grandfather meeting basic standards. And I agree. Those are the kind of situations that would be great. Chris, have you heard that? I think if we move ahead with trying to come up with something that accomplishes the example that we just heard, with all the other things you've said, we're moving in the right direction.
I think
we're spending a lot of time on this, really on a couple of items that I think if you just looked around or talked among yourselves and came up with the majority,
I think there's some more artful language we need to use under hardship. So it's not just financial, but it can include other things.
And can we get rid of the name hardship? Because I don't think that's really what it is. It's not a hardship for this gentleman. What we're saying is he meets the standards that are right. He's got a line of sight if he'll just do a few things. And he's in support of that.
Yes, he explained it to me as a hardship. That's what he called it.
I know. Maybe I'm hung up on the word. But
it's just it's an exception, though, to the specifics of this ordinance.
Yes.
So we'll figure out a way to.
But it, okay, figure out some way with that. Okay. All right.
So otherwise, we will now. I guess where I'm still not clear on is we're bringing this back. Frankly, with all the alternatives, the question is: does council are we also asking us to come back with this phased-in tiered approach also, or do we take this as it is with this modified exceptions provision and removing the additional right the additional security measures, the excessive calls for service measure? That's what I'm looking. That's the direction I'm looking.
Councilman Kavanaugh, yep. Higgins, you're the ones that introduced the tiered.
Well, if the exceptions allows for those stores we talked about that had no calls for service or very few over the last so many years, if that exception allows for them not to have to comply with the whole thing, then that would be okay too. But as long as you know the tiered thing is doing the same thing, if your exceptions are,
I think you're right. But I do think Councilman Kavanaugh has a good point in that. Even like the gentleman you talked about still has an unsafe situation with the blocked windows. And I think this is an opportunity to, you know, raise those standards, but in a way that doesn't create an undue or unreasonable burden. I think that that's also one of the objectives, is to create a more safe environment. And I think this is a good, this is a time we can do that and accomplish that. Because once again, I think we're all in sync with the objective. It's just how do we get there? So does that give you enough?
Yeah, well, so what I'm hearing is you would like us to come back with something that include calls for service as an exception. And I'll tell you, that's going to be trying to draw that line in the sand is going to be.
No, I don't think that's what we're saying. I think.
Well, that's right. Okay.
And I don't know what the solution is. I think what we're saying is take in the totality, create a situation where, for example, and that's a great example, that gentleman could be able to send something to the city. Maybe we go out and we say, listen, you need to do this, this, and this. It's my, and it would apply for an exception.
That's fine. I think we can get there. The question was, though, let's say that there is another business that really doesn't apply any exception related to their physical location, but they've had a great record. Is this still applying to them?
I think that's where I don't. That's I think it does,
the way
but they have an out because they can. They have an out.
What's the out?
Well, that's what I think we need you guidance on, because that's where the financial hardship.
No, let's just assume there's no.
Well, they have a great record, but they don't comply.
They're not.
What else is there a way to that wouldn't force them to go in and put in all this expensive stuff?
Okay, so we're assuming that everyone will comply, unless they have some kind of physical or financial hardship.
And I think what you're talking about, we need to define our goal. What is the goal of this ordinance? And if they are meeting the goal without each of these specifics, they will not have to comply with the specifics.
Thank you. I think you've stated
what Chris is saying. Well, what is that goal? And we're going to have to, is it calls for service or is it some other objective measure? And I think we'll go back with staff and we'll try and look, are there objective measures other than calls for service?
And maybe not using calls of service, because that's a number. Maybe it's a proportionate. If you are at 50% or 100% of the average, I don't know what it would be. Try and come up with something. It's tough to come up with an objective standard on this one. I get it. It's really tough. Give it a try. Because you had something to say.
Mayor, I was just going to put out the option that, you know, in lieu of referring to it as a hardship exception, we could make a waiver provision, essentially, which is basically would cover the hardship exception ideas and also allow for you to say if a store believes that they are not the problem, that they could come, you know, it does still place the burden on the store to say, I don't want to be a part of this ordinance, you know, seek a waiver from the requirements of the ordinance, but at least it would allow the option for them to say,
I like the idea of a waiver, with a hardship being one of the reasons you could get a waiver.
Correct.
A financial hardship.
And then the other alternatives would be similar to like low calls
Let's
for service.
Let's separate those two things, because there's a difference between coming in and saying, I still have a lot of calls for service, but it's because of the physical limitations of my business, I can't get there. To me, those are very separate things than...
Well, what we're talking about is when we put in the ordinance, who does it apply to? And I think what you're talking about is ongoing.
Yes.
When does an existing store rise to the level of having to comply with the ordinance, mm-hmm. right?
Because mm-hmm. you could be a great store today.
And that's the dilemma.
Different manager comes in next year.
A year from now, you're right.
And it's, things change.
You're right.
So.
Okay. Yeah, work up some of those ideas, because I think that's a great point. You know, we're taking a snapshot in time when really this is an ever-evolving thing. And at some point in time, a non-problem store could become a problem store. And how do we address that to get to our objectives, which are reduce the burden on the city and police department and increase public safety? Okay.
Well, Mayor, I mean, yeah. Don't we want eventually everybody to be in compliance with the ordinance? So that's where the kind of the grant program idea came
yeah.
in, where we can help businesses get there through a little bit more considered effort.
And I think that's where we're heading.
Down the road, right. And as we identify, like you said, maybe in the next round of CDBG or something like that, because those applications are in. But that's a great, I mean, it's something we can certainly look
at. And I think as we explain it, I think that can get us there. Because I don't think we want to lower things. We just want to make it easy for people who are good actors and continue to be good actors.
No, we want to reduce crime. I think what we've come to in this very long discussion is that we have a standard here. We just want to make sure that the exceptions, hardship or otherwise, are adequate. I would note that the exception section is the longest section in this standard. So it may just need some tweaking to address some of the mayor's concerns. So I wouldn't think that it needs an entire...
Now, we normally don't hear from the public during study sessions, but we have heard from the industry, and since we've been talking about you, Tim and Trish, do you still want to say something?
Very brief,
because here's the deal. We got people in this room that need to take a break, and they're going to get up and take a break. No, go right ahead.
I just want to pass around. It kind of fits in what's being talked about and what council member Higgins talked about.
On the tiered approach. For the record, my name is Trish Hart, and this is Tim McCabe, and we're here on behalf of the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance. We met with the city staff on October 12th and went over the draft. And based upon that meeting, they made several changes, which they spoke to you about today. When we left that meeting, one of the things that was kind of an unresolved issue was the hardship exemption, because when we were meeting, no one really felt like the hardship really... the way it was written really met the objectives of what it was trying to do. So basically, when we left the meeting on the 12th, we said, you know what, we're going to go back to our members and see if we can't come up with some way to help with the hardship exemption. And this is what you have before you, the convenience store ordinance proposal. That's how we came up with the tiered approach, which the first tier would be all the stores would be required to register, which basically all that does is just allows the police department to have all the pertinent information they need to about the store, who manages it, so forth, and then also have the employee training. The second tier would be for those people that had more calls to service. That would be the cameras, the storage, the signs, the safes, the lightings. And based upon the way it's written right now in the draft, there would be fines associated if you were not in compliance with those sections of the ordinance. And then the final tier would be those reserved for the ones with the highest level of calls for service, and that would basically bring in all the rest of the ordinance. And we believe that if you put in this tiered approach, that we could probably remove the hardship exemption. And we would support, and basically what would happen is if you were a new store or you remodeled your store, you'd be subjected to the whole ordinance. There was also some talk about the beer coolers.
Hey, Trish.
Yes.
Councilmember
Richards. Sorry. How would you define remodel?
I think that in the design review standards, I think that there is a, isn't there a specific, I think there's a specific language that states, I think it's like a certain percentage of your, is it 50% of a change? There's in the design review standards, there's a definition that.
So if I change 30% one year, 30% the next year, 30% the next year, can I avoid?
We're going to have Gordon answer that question.
Yeah, that's a little slippery. We need to be kind of tight on what that means up front.
From a
Speaking strictly from a zoning perspective, typically when we talk about those standards, we talk about changes to the certificate of occupancy. And we use the building code standard. Whatever triggers a change to that certificate of occupancy, we would generally call a remodel. And those are objective standards that are already in the building code.
A change to the certificate of occupancy? The remodel trigger. What I think they're looking for, though, is you could have the same use,
it would be,
but it, they may want to change it out, a new...
Well, for example, to get a CFO, if you went in and ripped out the coolers and remodeled the inside and had to
that
get...
That wouldn't necessarily trigger a CFO change unless...
What if you had to get a tenant improvement...
TI
building.
TIs generally don't.
So we, council, will probably need to come up with our own.
TIs do need tenant certificates of improvement.
But I don't think that's what you're looking for.
It depending upon, right, depending upon what the change is. For example, if you were a retail use and you did a minor TI for, like, shelf reduction, they might not change.
You wouldn't have to get a permit for that.
Right, but you might need.
But if you had to come in and get a permit, you're doing structural things.
Right.
And if you have to do structural things, you can't move in until the final sign-off on that is.
Exactly.
And that would then, I mean, that's a pretty low standard, actually.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because if you're talking about completely closing down a store for the remodel and then opening it back up, but what if they're doing stuff inside that is low impact that they might need a permit for, but they're staying open during the course of that, so they don't need a new CFO? You know, so I appreciate bringing that up, Trish, because I just think we need to be clear somehow.
If it's a relatively
what minor if it case. If they have to get a permit for it, that's considered a remodel. I don't know how that plays out.
Well, I don't want to create an incentive where people try not to get permits.
No, they already have that. They already have that incentive.
That happens, all right.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna say, this will be the lowest.
Nothing new there.
And you know, we're dealing with the one case in 10,000 cases. Which,
and the whole reason for the tiered approach was to go to your point, Mayor, was that we were trying to figure out how do we make this easy on the folks that aren't causing the problem, and that there are tools and there are mechanisms to go after the folks that are. And so that's how we came up with the tiered approach. And Tim, if you have any other.
I guess the only thing I'll just agree, I know there's a lot of stuff that was talked about today, is what the assistant chief had said. This, especially in the last 4 or 5 months, this has been a partnership, and we've all worked together. I know, and we're not trying to go through a process here that we're not trying to slow it down. It's just that we're trying to do the right thing. We all have the same goals. Our issue is one size doesn't fit all. We've got, as the police department had mentioned earlier, we've got one extreme to another, whether you're in a Quick Trip, an old or a new Circle K, or you're in an independent store. This is a very multifaceted business. It's very visible and already significantly regulated. So it's a little bit more complicated. So we're trying to bring this to a solution that works for everybody as quickly as possible. Our goals are the same, reduce serious crime. We want to work with the police department to reduce the burden. I also want to share with the council as well, one of our stakeholders that has been very involved in these, that's part of these 10 stores, have had 3 separate meetings, 2 with the chief and his staff, to work on plans. Now, when I say stakeholder, this person and his team is the decision maker for this organization at the very top. He's had 3 separate meetings, 2 with the police chief. One of them was actually at their facility and showed the chief and his staff how all of their crime prevention techniques work and how they share it with other cities. It's all about getting the serious crime off the street. The other meeting is with Councilmember Kavanaugh. And I think most importantly is the commitment here is this stakeholder is absolutely committed to reducing crime and is going to do all the right things. And some of those processes have started. So there are a few issues. I'll just compliment briefly with the the beer netting. The issue there is we're not opposed. And let me understand. I speak here today representing everybody. This presentation here has been blessed by everybody, all of our stakeholders that are involved in this. The biggest concern, the beer netting is that we've got information studies in other parts of the country that when beer netting goes up, that it doesn't make a difference. If they really want to get the beer, they find ways to remove the netting. That's our concern. We're not concerned. Locking the coolers, we're okay with that. That's where the biggest problems occur, people trying to get in the coolers. The beer netting provides an undue expense that we feel, based upon research that we've done, really doesn't do anything from 2 to 6 in the morning, where less than 15% of the crime is.
Basically, we've come a long way in a short period of time with the help of some of you and the police department, and we're really getting close on this, and we really think that we can do the right thing and solve all the needs.
Can I suggest that you continue with that effort with the police?
Absolutely.
You see what happens when people like me come in and start bringing up minute details. And while I love your discussion on beer netting, I hope you can solve that with staff and can get that done. So, and like I said, I'm the one that created a lot of the.
Well, we appreciate all the time and effort that Mayor, Council, and staff have taken on.
I think you heard the discussion today, and from a policy standpoint, where we want to go. I think the police staff, like you've said, you've been working with them diligently. Keep doing that, and I hope that what comes back to us will be something that everyone can agree on and that accomplishes all of our goals and objectives.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take about a 5-10 minute break here. So we'll be back at 9:30. Thank you very much. Okay. The next item on the agenda is to discuss have a presentation discussed by direction on Prop 203, or I guess not Prop 203, but the consequences should Prop 203 be approved. And that's the medical use of marijuana. So Mr. Sheffield and Ms. Spinner.
Mayor, you're correct. We are here to start this discussion with the council if Prop 203 does pass. And the reason we're here now starting at this point is because the Department of Health Services has requested that cities begin this process because they have to impose rules and regulations within 120 days if the proposition passes. If the city is going to impose zoning regulations with regard to the medical use of marijuana, DHS wants those zoning requirements or regulations in place before they impose their rules. So that's why we're starting the conversation now. And if passed, well, let me tell you how we're going to go forward. I'm going to talk about what is in Prop 203 and what the law allows and what it requires. And then Gordon will talk to you about some of the options with regard to zoning. And then we'll seek council direction on how you want us to move forward after today. So if Prop 203 passes, it will allow patients with certain medical conditions to get a certification from the Department of Health Services to allow them to use marijuana for medical purposes. And to obtain the DHS certification, they will have to present a physician's authorization or certificate stating that the patient has the type of medical condition that qualifies under Prop 203.
Debbie, Councilmember Summers has a question.
Debbie, what kind of physician? I mean, when I hear the word physician, I automatically assume doctor of medicine.
And there is a definition of physician in the statute. It includes a medical doctor, an osteopath, naturopath, and homeopath.
Homeopath.
JD.
Yes.
Okay, Ken.
Yeah.
And what exactly is the definition of debilitating medical condition?
All right, we will jump. We have it in a slide here. The qualifying patients, if they have any of the following medical conditions, and these aren't exclusive because the proposition actually states it lists a number of them that you see here, and in the attachment, I listed all that are specifically identified in the proposition, but there's also an express provision in the proposition that says someone can petition DHS. So if they believe that they have a medical condition that would be benefited with the use of medical marijuana that's not on the list, they can petition DHS, and DHS will have to go through a process to determine whether that is going to be a qualifying medical condition. But you can see here that
chronic pain, nondescript chronic pain of unknown origin is potentially.
Potentially, yes. You would have to have a first. Does that qualify under what DHS now says? It says severe and persistent muscle spasms, including those characteristics of multiple sclerosis. It does add severe and chronic pain, which is not defined, severe nausea, seizures, etc. But potentially, yes, council member.
Do you know how many, I'm going to make this a long point. Do you know how many people, and we're not the first state to do this, California and several other states have done this, Colorado. What percentages of patients with clinical diseases, cancer, HIV, MS, glaucoma, have prescriptions for marijuana and how many go to that nondescript pain. Do you know what those stats are?
I do not.
I do. It's 2 to 4%. 2 to 4% have cancer and glaucoma. This is California. HIV, AIDS, and MS, 2 to 4%. The rest go to for chronic pain or nondescript pain, which is things that a physician looks at you, go, you say you're in pain, but I have no reason for it. And most of those prescriptions are going to people ages 17 to 35. Okay, I'm going to step off my soapbox for a moment because you have other things to do.
Well, and can we do this? I mean, I don't want to cut you short, but the reality is that we can sit here and talk about Prop 203. The fact is it either passes or it doesn't pass. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't pass, everything we say here is sort of a non-issue. If it does pass, we have to live with it regardless of whether we like it or don't like it. And so the question I've got is that how does it, without going into a complete thing on Prop 203, the idea is that it's going to allow medical marijuana dispensaries or whatever you call them, and it allows up to, and you can tell the states, and I'd like to know how that relates to us and what we need to look at.
But just a quick question on that. I still don't understand how, if this passes, I always thought federal law says, no, it doesn't. So how does that, how does this prop differ from the one we voted on a few years back? You know, because I know we have these plans to go forward, but how does that?
I don't have that specific information in terms of comparing the prior initiatives with this initiative, but my understanding, it was not because of federal law. The argument is, and there is an argument in the publicity pamphlet, that the state is not required to enforce federal laws, so its choice or decision not to enforce federal drug laws is not a violation. That would not necessarily mean the feds could not come in and enforce federal law if they chose to. In these other states, it's my understanding they have not. When it's only for medical marijuana use, the federal law enforcement has not stepped in.
Thanks. Thanks.
So I guess I'm just going to go forward. If you want me to skip through some of these, we certainly can
do it. Just go for, I mean.
The dispensary. So what we are asking direction for you today is with regard to zoning regulations, because if it passes, they will be able to potentially open dispensaries in the city of Mesa and other cities. These dispensaries will have to be registered and certified by DHS, who will be imposing a number of different rules. But they are asking that if you are going to impose zoning regulations on these dispensaries, please do it before they start reviewing these applications, so that there's a specific rule that the applicant has to certify that they are in compliance with the local zoning ordinances.
Debbie, question I have is there's 120 dispensaries in the entire state, one for every 10 pharmacies. Now, can they cluster those, or are those like in the community? If Mesa had 100 pharmacies, would we be limited to 10 dispensaries, or could, I mean, I'm talking theoretical here, could 90 of the 120 be in Mesa and the rest of 30 spread throughout the state, or is there any differentiation?
The proposition doesn't say they can't be clustered, so arguably they could. We have had conversations with DHS, and their intent is to spread these equally or
proportionally. So DHS can decide where to approve. Okay.
And they have said that they're going to try and make it proportional to the populations.
Okay.
They also understand that the proposition says they can issue more than 120 certificates if it's needed to ensure at least one dispensary in every
county. There's a lot of pain between 17 and 35.
We'll also look at, in terms of where they approve and don't approve dispensaries, if there is not a dispensary within 25 miles of a qualifying patient, that patient can grow and cultivate his or her own marijuana. And they're going to try and avoid.
But the reality is that, you know, this isn't like a free market thing where things will go to the place that's the easiest, you know, like massage parlors. We before we tightened our rules, frankly, the fact of the matter was that they sort of congregated in Mesa because our rules were less strict than others. That doesn't seem like that's going to be the case here if DHS does decide where they go.
That's true, but they would prefer that.
Well, no, I get that. I just want to make sure that there's not something that we could inadvertently attract a disproportionate number of these, but there is a control mechanism at the state level. Councilmember Summers has a question.
What
can these be, or why aren't these, if this is medicinal, if this is medicine, why isn't it dispensed at a pharmacy? Or can it be? Or, I mean, my wife just had surgery. She got Vicodin for pain, actually physical pain, and they prescribed her Vicodin, and I went to Cigna Pharmacy to get it filled. Why can't we just say this has to be dispensed in a pharmacy by a pharmacist?
Possibly we could. MESA cannot because we don't have the – well, let me back up. The way Vicodin and other controlled substances or medications are now, the regulations come down because these are approved by the FDA. They impose rules and regulations.
They're medicines.
Traditional medicines. Medicinal use of marijuana, it will not be regulated by the FDA, so they are not subject to the same rules and regulations that other controlled substances or medicines are. What Pima County is doing, counties have the authority to impose health safety regulations, including this type of dealing with where can medicines be sold.
Counties do.
Counties do.
Cities not.
Cities do not. We do zoning. What Pima County is considering, and I don't believe they have approved it yet, but Pima County Board of Supervisors is considering requiring that if Proposition 203 passes, that it only be sold in pharmacies. Maricopa County possibly could do that. That's one of the things that governmental entities are talking about, but I don't think a firm answer has come up yet.
But either way, it doesn't apply to us because we don't have that option available to us. We only can look at zoning.
Okay, correct.
So the county could do that. We can't.
Possibly. Counties are looking at that now. Can they do that?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't we jump to the zoning issues?
Okay. Under Prop 203, we are given there's specific enabling legislation that authorizes the cities to adopt reasonable zoning regulations that limit the use of the land. As we've said, we have about 120 days to do this. Primarily, we believe is that should Prop 203 pass, the governor would sign a proclamation regarding the election, probably sometime in December. We would have 120 days from the proclamation in order to have this done. DHS has told us they're probably going to take the full 120 days in order to do their rulemaking requirement. They are strongly recommending that we get going with our zoning regulations, even starting now prior to the election. In terms of timing this from a MESA standpoint, we're suggesting that we have something prepared to go for the November Planning and Zoning Board in terms of a text amendment to the existing zoning ordinance, even though we've got the new zoning code kind of coming up on that. That would bring something to the council possibly in December or early January. We'd like to have the effective date of this in February, which would put us ahead of the 120-day period in March. In terms of what other cities are doing, the Arizona League of Cities and Towns is creating a model ordinance. We believe that should be available later this month. We're out ahead of that a little bit right now. Pima County has already drafted an ordinance through the...
Gordon, we're out ahead of it, but are we having discussions with them or other cities working with them?
Yes.
So they're developing that in coordination with the cities.
Yes, the city of Phoenix is kind of leading that effort right now, but in terms of being kind of the drafter of that, so to speak, but the rest, everybody else is kind of contributing on a collaborative basis. Pima County, as Debbie mentioned, has drafted an ordinance through their health code. It's requiring a licensed pharmacist or a physician. This, again, we don't know. We haven't heard whether that's passed or not. Maricopa County has proposed a set of zoning amendments. They're going to take that to their P&Z Commission on November 4th.
Has there been any discussion in Maricopa County about the health code approach that you know of?
I think there's been discussion about it, but I don't know if they've gotten serious about going that far yet.
Okay.
And then Tucson has actually developed a draft ordinance specifically related to zoning amendments. Many of the recommendations that we're presenting today are based on some of the ideas that have come up from Tucson. The proposal we're taking a look at right now is this would become a by right use, not a council use permit, in the C2 and C3 district. And the dispensary, if they have off-site cultivation, which is the other part of this. They have to cultivate the site or cultivate the marijuana in order to dispense it. They can have on-site cultivation at their dispensaries, or they can have one off-site cultivation facility as well. If it's an off-site cultivation facility and that's a separate land use, we're suggesting that would be authorized in C3, M1, or M2. We would specifically prohibit.
Just a quick question. That's indoor only. Is that correct?
Yes.
In an enclosed lock facility.
Yes.
So it says it's off-site, but it's indoor?
Yes.
It's off-site, but indoor?
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
We would specifically prohibit it in the industrial districts in terms of the dispensary locations. That would not, right now, we would specifically prohibit the dispensaries in the employment or industrial districts, the PEP, the M1, the M2.
Mayor? Yeah, looking at this, I feel really uncomfortable. I want to reserve our commercial space for sales tax producing businesses. And these specifically in this ordinance, you can't collect sales tax on them that I've been able to determine, at least. They have some exceptions to, they're a nonprofit. And so,
can we collect sales tax on medicinal bongs?
Moving right along.
We can't even collect sales tax on the munchies.
I don't even know what that is.
The Doritos, the Ding Dongs.
Go ahead.
Anyway, is there a way to, I mean, is there a zoning category that this can go in so it doesn't use one of the arguments about check cashing stores is they were in commercial facilities, they didn't produce any sales tax revenue. The idea behind commercial districts is to set aside a place for sales tax producing businesses to be located to help, you know, so they can do business and they generate revenue for the city. So I kind of feel uncomfortable having them in any commercial district at all, and I almost would prefer them in like an OS district.
Let me,
a doctor's office. These are supposed to be just like doctor's offices. Doctor's offices are in office parks. So,
Mayor,
throwing that out.
I would respectfully disagree with the premise behind commercial districts. I don't necessarily think they're organized to generate sales tax. They're organized because the land use activity is there because of the coming and going and the traffic that's related to the specific commercial transactions that are taking place between people, not necessarily generation of sales tax. That's kind of a side benefit and one of the things that the cities use in order to generate revenue for the municipal aspect of this. But if you're actually looking at it from a land use perspective, what you're taking a look at is the actual transaction that's taking place, the indoor activity, the parking that's being generated, and then the vehicular traffic that's being driven to those particular sites because they're attracted to that particular land use.
Well, I mean, how is this different than a doctor's office?
It's different because you're not actually going there for a doctor's visit. You're going there to actually purchase something of value to you and then bring that back to your home for actual use.
So it's more like a pharmacy kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong.
If we took dispensary out of this, this is just a smaller version of a pharmacy. Quite honestly, I mean, you go. It's a controlled substance.
What's the square footage? 2,500 square feet.
That's
is the
what
max?
We're. One of the recommendations that we have that would actually be specific to the activity is that we would maximize this at 2,500 square feet. That'd be the size. That's a relatively small inline store size. The storage of the actual marijuana would be limited to 500 square feet within that, there would be at least 25% of that floor area would be set aside for customer floor space, basically the waiting area waiting for this, and that this could only be done from a permanent building. In addition to that, we're also stating that they wouldn't be allowed to have a drive-through window service. You couldn't drive up and, you know, show the dispensary the recommendation that you're getting from your physician, that there's not any open air seating that's associated with this. Again, that goes back to the proposition you can't smoke it on site or you can't use it on site, and that the dispensary would not be allowed to have a delivery service. So you couldn't call up and say, hey, I need 2.5 ounces, can you deliver this to me? And they would provide that delivery like if they were delivering a pizza or something like that. So that's part of the recommendation.
So these could go in vacant check cashing stores. And so I remove the blight of check cashing stores and I get the blight of
medical marijuana
dispensaries in my neighborhood now? Is that what you're telling me here?
Well, hold just a second with that. There's one of the things that we're also proposing with this is that there are rather large separation requirements, both from protected uses and from some uses that are similar to this.
500, 1,200, 1,024.
We're using 2,400 from other dispensaries, so that's almost a half mile. And the idea behind that is that if you have one if there were one dispensary that would be located at an intersection, you couldn't have another one within that same intersection. So you wouldn't get, in the case of the payday loan stores, one of the issues that we had is we had a congregation of those facilities, four, five, six sometimes, at one intersection. With this type of spacing requirement, you could only get one at the most, and that you would have to be at least a half mile away from another facility.
Councilmember Kavanaugh has a question.
Gordon, assuming this passes in these allowable locations, how does our sign code affect this? I'm assuming, are there going to be, we have the video signs or freeway landmark monument signs, or how are you going to approach signage issues for the dispensaries?
Big neon sign.
We haven't proposed any regulations on the signage different from what we would already authorize for commercial activities. We've typically taken the approach that we regulate time, space, and manner without regulating the message. So from that standpoint, if they're in a commercial district, they would be allotted commercial signage and the message would be up to them.
Does the dispensary also act as the prescription giver too? Can they have a physician on site at a dispensary, see patients, write prescriptions?
Well, I'm sorry, Gordon. Actually, the way the process works is they have to get a prescription from a doctor or a certificate. It's actually not even a prescription. They get a certificate that they have a qualifying medical condition and that the use of marijuana would help alleviate their symptoms.
Right.
They then take that certificate to Department of Health Services and they get an identification card. That identification card allows them, each patient, to get up to 2.5 ounces for every 2 weeks. So they would go to a dispensary and they would just say they want to buy whatever quantity. That identification card would be entered into the system and they would say, okay, the dispensary would then be able to see, does this qualifying patient have capacity to purchase marijuana now, or have they already used up their 2.5 ounces?
I'm guessing that DHS hasn't worked out the details about how they issue the cards. I mean, is that an online process? I'm just wondering if a physician is in a dispensary and they can get a certificate and then they fill out some online process, can they walk away with marijuana that same day?
They're going to have to
head shaking no back there.
They're going to have to get a card issued by DHS. So it's
some
not,
kind of process. Like,
yes. And you're right, they haven't set forth the process yet, but they have already set out in the proposition all of the information that has to be submitted. So it gives you in here the type of information that has to be submitted. The dispensaries obviously will be under more scrutiny than the patients. They'll have to go through fingerprint background checks by DHS before they will be permitted to dispense the marijuana.
Councilmember Higgins.
So how is this with a true patient, someone with cancer, MS? Their caregiver's going to get a card to do this pickup and running around for them? Is that in there too? I'm sure.
A caregiver can receive a card. So a qualifying patient gets their card that allows them to get 2.5 ounces of marijuana every 2 weeks. They can designate a caregiver. That caregiver has to get certified by DHS, and they will have to have a separate card for each patient that they assist.
Okay.
So if you have a caregiver, she has a card for you so that when the caregiver goes to the dispensary will know, okay, this medical marijuana is being purchased for this patient as opposed to some other patient.
Right, so there's the system in there for those true patients and caregivers.
Hey, Gordon, where did you come up with these separation numbers? I mean, why a half mile? Why not a mile?
The separations are basically set up because One, the proposition talks about reasonable zoning requirements. Right now, the maximum separation requirement in the Mesa zoning ordinance is 1,200 feet. What we've done is we've basically extended that to keep the separation, the number of dispensaries at an intersection, if we were to put these in commercial districts, to one. And we wanted to assure that. So that's where the 2,400 foot came from. The 1,200 foot is the same separation that we use for sexually oriented businesses. It's the same one we use for payday loan stores. It's the same one we use for pawn shops and those types of things from so-called protected classes of uses, which includes churches and parks and libraries. What we've added to this, we have also included HOA-maintained open spaces. And that has a fairly significant effect on the availability of commercial, commercially zoned property. And I'll show you a map a little bit later. But it significantly cuts down the amount of C2 that would be available as sites for these locations. The other thing that we've added to this is a 500-foot separation that's already in the proposition for schools K through 12. We'd like to add daycare and preschools to that under the same reasoning as the schools K through 12. We've also added group homes for the handicapped with a 500-foot, right? That part of the group homes for the handicapped not only includes the elderly, but also includes folks who have recovered from these past addictions and are considered handicapped under the federal definition. Same reasoning we have the 2,400-foot separation from things like residential substance abuse treatment facilities, alcohol rehab facilities. Same reasoning would apply to the group homes for the handicapped. Since we have an element of folks who use group homes for the handicapped, we would keep a similar separation from those folks.
Councilman,
have we looked at, you know, we have lots of county islands still within the city.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to be able to regulate what goes on in the county island if it's totally surrounded by the city of Mesa?
Our intent is to cooperate in terms of locations with the Maricopa County Planning Department. If we know about a location, for example, when we do our group home registries, if we know about a group home registry in the county, we also count the 1,200-foot separation from that for group homes. We would apply a similar concept here.
And they have they're going to be doing something similar, I'm going to guess?
Yeah, they're going through the similar process as we are right now.
Do they have to keep their
okay. We've talked about the maximum space for dispensaries, some of the other requirements. This would require registration with the Mesa Planning Division, similar to what we do for group homes. We would require, as part of the zoning requirement, they maintain an active DHS license or registration. And comply with the DHS rules. We talked about some of the specific infrastructure requirements or things that they can't have. Real quickly, this is a map of the city. The areas in red are indicative of where the areas of the C2 and C3 zoning districts. The areas that have the little blue circle around them on the map that you see, those areas are basically it's a 500-foot radius from schools. What I wanted to show you is if you kind of drill down a little bit to specific intersections, what this is an example of the intersection of Gilbert and Southern Avenue. And if the area that would be eligible after you take into account all of the separation requirements and the zoning, if you can mix those two things together, is the area that's in red that's kind of in the dashed oval in the very center. The big yellow circle kind of outlines broadly what the actual property that zones C2 and or actually C2 at this particular intersection. And then after you apply the separation requirements for group homes, for parks, for HOA open spaces, for schools, you apply the 1,200-foot spacing requirement from the churches and those types of things, you have a very, very small percentage of that particular intersection that would be left eligible for sites for this particular location. A similar example would be the intersection of Power Road and McKellips Road. Again, in this particular case, we have both churches and parks and HOA-maintained open spaces that are there. We drill down from the area that's in the yellow circle. Basically, it's outlining what has been C2 for that intersection. What's left after you take into account the separation requirements are those two circles, basically they're small triangles that are left that are just to the west of Power Road on the north and south side of McKellips.
Yeah, so, Higgins?
You know, it's not coming up on the big screen, and we don't have the little circles on our map. So
yeah.
So you're saying just the little triangle to the south. Yeah,
it was just
it's really hard to see
ago.
That.
I just added this this morning.
Okay, there we go.
Oh, that's fine.
So just those two little circles are the only things that would meet the requirements?
Yes, once we apply the separation and the zoning.
Really? This, and I wouldn't, okay.
And then this would be the at going back to the Gilbert and Southern site, the only thing that would be left over is that the area that's left in red in the very center.
I don't even see it.
Councilmember?
You have the large yellow circle.
Okay.
Is the area that's zone C2. The smaller dashed red circle in the center is kind of circling around the C2 portion. It's kind of a pinkish red color.
Okay.
That would be with the leftover C2 after you account for the separation requirements. So the separation requirements really limit the eligible locations within the C2 district for this. So the combination of those two things create a fairly restrictive condition.
Yeah, and I know we have to have setback. I don't know what that really accomplishes. I mean, if you're at the corner of Gilbert and Southern, you're at the corner of Gilbert and Southern. You know, whether you reward some real estate owner simply because they happen to own a building that's here or somebody across the street, I don't know that it matters that much, but I don't know how else you draw lines that... Yeah, I know. It's just so.
Not this bad.
If it keeps it in general vicinity where we want it to be, that's fine. I think if we're too restrictive, though, I don't know what we accomplish, but it doesn't really matter. Because I think, let's put it this way, I don't know that it really matters because I think there will be plenty of opportunities if we have maybe you look at what our proportionate of the 120 would be. Mesa makes up what 10-11% of the 10% of the. 8% of the population. 8% of the population. We got to figure we're talking about maybe 10 of these in the state. If DHS follows a population, we're talking about 10 of these in the city is what would be the eligible amount.
Correct.
Assuming that they follow that.
Yes.
Proportion. Okay. And I think that there's plenty of opportunity to find 10 spaces throughout the city if this law does go through.
And
Councilmember Higgins?
Are we going to include preschools and daycares? Because you had a question mark, so I didn't know.
That we're suggesting that it's not, but it when we start taking into account daycares and preschools on that, there that further restricts us even beyond some of the things.
You have a lot of preschools and strip centers,
right?
Yes.
And did we look at things like tattoo parlors and massage parlors as another overlay of things that you want separations like we currently have separations for some of those today?
We didn't necessarily take a look at that because we were taking a look at the separations from the protected classes,
okay,
so to speak, and without taking a look at the other so-called nefarious uses.
But they have separations between those now.
Yes, between like uses.
Right. So I just wondered if
separations between tattoo parlors to another tattoo, but not necessarily a tattoo parlor to a pawn shop.
Right.
A tattoo and a pawn shop, in theory, could be right next to each other.
Okay.
Okay. Councilmember Summers?
Is there anything in the law that prohibits, because one of the areas, I'm looking at your map, mm-hmm. we can throw it back up, I want to talk about that a little bit, and the potential unintended consequences of maybe over-regulating this a little bit. One of the areas, the largest areas in red in my district happens to be Superstition Springs Center.
Yes.
Is there anything in the law as written that would prohibit a private business or corporation from using their CCRs to prohibit this particular use? Could the owner of the mall say, we're not running to you, I don't care if it is allowed by zoning?
Yes, I believe they can.
Okay, so private business gets to determine what can come into their facility. Here's one of my concerns, and I'm just trying to think of what some of the unintended consequences are. Two issues. One, when I look at this map, again, it's the green map with the little red dots of where it would be allowed. That's up here right now. It seems to shoehorn everything into the area that we're working really, really hard to clean up. That is Main Street mostly, particularly West Mesa, but also that area between Stapley all the way out to Higley. Between our zoning and the potential for places like Superstition Springs, who are likely not to allow these types of uses in their own facility by their own right as landowners. My fear is that we start shoving these into areas that, and kind of working ourselves backwards, we're going to end up shoehorning them into the same areas that we're always had problems revitalizing. The other concern, and this may not be a concern given the size of the community, but if it gets outside that 25 miles because we can only open a couple and they're both in West Mesa, then we're going to end up with each a lot of homeowners potentially in East Mesa or portions of Mesa growing their own, which is allowed by law, and that could be a larger burden on law enforcement than if we were to have these in commercial structures.
Yeah, but it's not 25 miles. The city is
25. It may not be that
you
big
could,
a deal.
One or two locations would take care of that within
so
the
a central location and Lindsay and Maine.
Mesa is only 18 miles from
right.
And then you had one in Tempe or Chandler would cover, you know.
The one spot at Lindsay and Maine could cover as a crow flies 25 miles.
If you were to take an extreme and put one in, like, say, Country Club and McKellops and put another one at Elliott, and you might, there might be some crossover you don't quite catch.
Okay, so but we can skip over that last little problem. I guess my concern is how that's going to shoehorn it into areas that we're trying to redevelop.
Did I hear you say, and I must have missed this, with these zoning ordinances, it would be a use by right?
Yes.
So there's no special permit required?
No, there wouldn't be a here for this.
Mayor, I think the league is evaluating and they are considering some type of use permit, so that's certainly an option if the council...
Yes. Well, to me, we either need to do one of two things. We need to do what you're doing here, which basically identifies almost specific buildings that can be used, because if you look at that, there's like only three buildings at Gilder and Southern that can be used. That's a use by right, and you know they can either go there or not go there. If we're going to leave it with more flexibility, then you'd have to get into some sort of use permit. I'm not sure. This is not something we can prohibit, and I think we need to get over that. If this passes, these are going to be here. Mm-hmm. All we can do is make sure that they go in places that are acceptable to us. And that we can steer them toward places that preferred. I'd just soon not get into a use permit, because most of our use permits are can you do it or can't you do it. We can't control whether you can do this or not. That's out of our hands.
The approach that at least we've been recommending is a similar approach the council adopted when they were considering the sexually oriented business regulations, which is basically to say that we're going to set out very stringent criteria. And then if you meet the stringent criteria, then you can have the sexually oriented business, and we're going to do away with the hearing aspect of this. But we set the criteria up so high that it for the most part, people either decide that they don't want to go through the process, or it's just so difficult they just kind of go away, quite honestly. We've had, to my recollection, I think there's been one or two sexually oriented business license issued through the city in the last maybe 20
years.
Well,
this is a little bit different, though.
No, I understood, but
because the ability to put one of these stores in Mesa is a right that will be embedded in our Constitution. You know, it's a little bit different than a sexually oriented business.
Well, the reason for having the sexually oriented business is the speech is federally protected.
I get it, but it's a little different than the ability to do a specific business such as medical marijuana dispensary, because that specifically states that here are the terms, here are the conditions, here are the... All we can do is say where it can go. Basically, all we can say is where it can go and provide a few little guidelines, like no drive-throughs and things like that. I mean, am I missing something?
No.
If we're trying to try 203 through our ordinance, that's a loser. I
don't mean to imply that, you know, if 203 passes, that's the will of the people. Yes, yeah. You're right. We have to react to that. My approach in developing the recommendation for the council is to say that what's different about the SOB regulations is that it doesn't include the C2 district. The SOB regulations are C3 and M1.
Right.
The recommendation here includes C2 specifically because it is a commercial transaction, because it is a protected class of land use, if should 203 pass, and we're trying to regulate it such We're also trying to sit here and make sure that the side effects of this particular activity, as we've as been demonstrated by its by the activities that have taken place in California and Colorado, to a lesser extent in Montana, the side effects of this, we're trying to make sure that those are far enough away from the protected classes that we've got a reasonable separation for those.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
We're talking about regulating this through zoning because that's our only tool. Has the zoning board taken an in-depth look at this yet?
This is the first presentation.
Okay, so we're just getting this as a presentation to council as possibility. So we could send this to the zoning board to both look at what you recommend with specific rules and really ask two questions. Should we do it as you recommend with specific rules, embedding use by right, or should we have a council use permit for each of these facilities?
Sure.
I think that's a fair question to ask our zoning board and see what kind of feedback they get.
What we've come here today is to ask for some policy direction from the council to get some basic ideas. Once you've given those ideas, we would then develop a draft ordinance, and that would be presented and vetted to the
people. I like the idea of I personally don't like a use permit in this situation. I mean, once again, we can't affect that these things exist. And I think use permits should be whether we have an impact on specifically that. We can write rules that are strict enough to do that. Now, you can have, and I think we need to address that, as Councilman Summers said, unintended consequences that we push these, or because, you know, the HOA, for example. Mm-hmm. Truth of the matter is, in our older section of the city, we don't have HOAs. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to get the same protection you might get up in Nina's neighborhood where you have a prevalence of HOAs, which would preclude it from newer developments. That, I have a little bit of challenge with that simply because I think one of the unintended consequences is it pushes it toward older developments, which I'm not sure that's what we really want to do. I don't know that we want to keep it from newer developments and push it. So maybe we need to rethink that and come something that more evenly splits this. That's just my thought of it.
The prevalence of public parks are going to be higher in West.
And if that balances out,
amen to that.
You had a comment?
I just hope to craft this ordinance in a way that can force the Goldwater Institute to be in a position of defending marijuana.
Another quick question.
I have a hard time supporting it being in any commercial district. Just that's my initial thought there. Also, what would preclude a local nonprofit, because these are nonprofit dispensaries, what would preclude a local nonprofit from going through the application process, getting the right to have a dispensary in a certain neighborhood and then hold that license and never open as a strategy to not have one?
There you go.
I mean, if a neighborhood group wanted to keep them out of their community, couldn't they make that whole application and then hold that license and that dispensary?
Theoretically, yes. Practically, what DHS is required is when a patient goes in and whenever they get a qualifying card, so the patient has an identification card, DHS is required to give them a list of dispensaries in the area where they can go purchase the marijuana. I assume it would be quickly, the information would flow back to DHS.
Couldn't we always be out?
they have a card, or they're allowed to open a dispensary, but they're not actually dispensing the medicine, and therefore DHS might be more inclined to grant another card. I'm not sure I've thought through that off the top of my head, but I think that would be the reaction.
Okay. And just wondering how that, with the separation requirements, how that all works.
A really quick question about transport. If you're having an off-site growing place and we're driving, are there rules that DHS has thought about for transporting of product from their grow center to somewhere else? And is this going to be an issue in airports and that type of thing? Especially our local airports flying marijuana around the city or the state.
I guess I would have to personally DHS is going to have to impose regulations. Prop 203 does not set forth what those regulations are for transport. What I don't remember is if the off-site cultivation, if it's required to be in Arizona in Prop 203.
I think it is,
but I'm not sure that's expressly stated.
If it crossed straight lines, it would be federal.
But I can take a look at that and let you know.
It's just these things that come up that maybe they haven't thought about yet. Thank you.
Okay.
So The next step, you know, depending upon the reaction of the council, if they think these are a reasonable starting point, then the next step is to take this to the Planning and Zoning Board and
Is there anything here that I think is a starting point? I think what you're hearing is it's there's some specifics that we'd like to see if we can balance those out, but recognizing that we can't preclude these. And we also, which means we can't make regulations that are so onerous that by it's a de facto exclusion.
Right.
Just have to weigh those balances out. I think it's a good start.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Hurley from the Rose Law Group, we normally don't, once again, hear from people during study session, but you could speak during the comment period, but we'll just let you go ahead and speak here. You got a couple 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'll be very brief. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm Ryan Hurley. I'm with the Rose Law Group. I'm an attorney. I'm here today on behalf of our client, Community Cannabis Clinic. They are an extremely well-capitalized, very sophisticated group of investors that are committed to safe and responsible access to medical cannabis. We have been working with the best experts in the field, the best consultants out of Northern California, to learn from the mistakes of previous jurisdictions to ensure that if and when 203 passes, that it will be implemented in the safest and most responsible fashion possible. They have a very strong economic vested interest and personal interest in ensuring that this industry does not get a black eye in Arizona and that is run responsibly and run well. To that extent, we've reviewed your ordinance, and I'd like to commend you and your staff for getting out in front of this issue. It looks like this initiative is likely to pass, and it's important that you have your regulations in place before that, before it goes into effect. Generally speaking, the ordinance looks in line with the best examples of what's been working in other jurisdictions, so I think we're generally in agreement with most of the provisions. One item that I would like to throw out there for consideration is the possible unintended consequences of square footage limitations. A grow facility, generally speaking, a 3,000 square foot limitation is just not going to work for even a small to a medium-sized dispensary. And if that's the case, that means they're going to have to either do more grow facilities in the jurisdiction or they're going to have to go outside the jurisdiction. That will increase transport, which obviously increases the risk as council member mentioned. So I would like you to consider that and kind of mull that over as you were looking through this ordinance, that actually might produce counterintuitive results. Again, also on the dispensary side, larger dispensaries tend to be operated by more sophisticated, well-capitalized folks that have a larger interest in making sure that things go well. In previous jurisdictions, particularly in Colorado, most of the problems have been associated with these smaller type stores that don't require as much investment and as much sophistication to run. One last comment about the use permit. We believe it's prudent not to have a use permit simply because it opens up a possibility for litigation. And to address one final comment on the sales tax issue, we've actually analyzed that, and we do believe that the city could implement a sales tax if it wanted to. And that's all I have.
I like that, and on that, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And you know, I think you heard that this is the beginning of our process. I'm sure as both the league and we go through our normal zoning process that you'll have plenty of opportunity to weigh in on this.
Thank
you.
Much.
Okay, next item on the agenda is to hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. Any reports? Schedule of meetings. Ms. Kent.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This Thursday or tonight, the Vice Mayor will be hosting in District 4 Building Strong Neighborhoods meeting at 6:30 at Holmes Elementary School at 948 South Horn. And this Saturday, we have three events happening in Mesa. The first is a Mesa Financial Planning Day from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock at our Mesa Convention Center, which is 201 North Center. And we'll be having financial planning resources and workshops for our residents. Also, it's this Saturday is Community Day of Play from noon to 4 at Falcon Hill Park at 7222 East Jensen. The cost is $7 per child for unlimited access to rides, games, and there'll be a petting zoo. And also Saturday evening, there is a free double feature movie night at our amphitheater. Doors open at 5. Showtime's 6 o'clock for Casper and 8 o'clock for The Ring. So hopefully our residents and you all can come out and join us this Saturday at all these events.
Thank you.
Ms. Crocker, do we have any other requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. There being none, have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Fanner, a second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.